Okay, if I could have your attention, we're going to call the meeting to order. Of the attention out there, or I'll sing. Okay, good. Okay, I'm going to call the Fall 2007 California Council of Blind Board meeting to order. And first item here, according to my agenda, if I'm reading with my wrong hand, is roll call. Rhonda King. Here.
Joe Hanna, first vice president. Second vice president, Gene Lozano.
Here.
Secretary Rhonda King here. Treasurer Chris Gray.
Present.
Does anyone have the mic?
I have it.
Immediate past president, Kathy Skivers.
Excused.
She's absent, all right?
Mm. Yes, excused.
Excused.
Well, there's excused, and you know, there's
no yeah. Jerry Arakawa.
Here.
Gabe Griffith.
And he's also excused.
David Jackson.
Here.
Jane Cardis.
Here.
Ann Kaiser.
Here.
Peter Pardini.
Here.
Lois Preston.
Here.
Barbara Rhodes.
Excused.
Richard Ruetta.
Here. If we can get one closer to theirs. Okay, just a couple quick announcements. Of course, we are missing, as the role indicated, a couple of our board members. Unfortunately, as most of you know, Barbara Rhodes did have a stroke. She is working hard toward improving, and we all hope to see her back in the swing of things. Fighting the fight as only Barbara can at our next convention, beating up on those folks who don't provide services for blind people the way she thinks they ought to be. Mm-hmm. So we'll hope that she's back. And okay, Gabe Griffith is doing what I think next to taxes and a couple of other things is one of the worst things I've ever had to do, and that's moving this weekend. Mm. So he and Kathy, through a bunch of frustrating circumstances for her, was also unable to come. I'm going to tell you, and if anybody calls her and gives this away, they're going to be in deep trouble, but we're going to be doing a phone call surprise for her tomorrow and at the evening general session, and I think that should be some fun. I hope that it catches her by surprise and brightens her evening, because this is the first convention she's missed in, I don't know how many years, but it really hurts her not to be here, and it isn't quite the same. So, introductions really quickly. I want to introduce to you both someone that, and she can introduce her assistant, but someone we've grown to know and to love, our great audio person, Teresa Santiago.
And she's bringing a cable
ring. All right. Mm-hmm. She's always on the run somewhere, so you know. I'm going to let her introduce Carlos, who's telling me where she is. Okay. Her assistant. But we'll hold that. Actually, Carlos, I'll let you introduce yourself. Because she's running, getting something at the moment, as Carlos was trying to tell me, but I was too dim-witted to quite understand. So, okay. Her assistant, Carlos, why don't you introduce yourselves to the membership?
Hello, everyone. My name is Carlos Vasquez. I am the assistant sound engineer to Teresa Santiago. I live in Hemet, California. Right now, everything is fog over there. It's really foggy. It's really smoky. I just talked to my girls, and they're all scared right now for all the smoke. I am very happy to be here and be part of all this. This is really meaningful to me. I always wanted to do something and make a difference in some way in the world, and I feel like I'm doing it right now today here by being here with you guys, being around you guys, and helping you, and making everything sound clear to you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Carlos. Hand-picked, and you know if Teresa picks him, he's got to be good. So, okay. Number three, we have one more introduction, but I'm going to save it for a little bit. Number three is reading of the agenda, which I'm doing. Okay, number four is reading approval of minutes. Oh, Teresa is here. Teresa, you want to say hello? We wanted to introduce you, Teresa Santiago, to the members again. You want to say hi?
I'm coming.
She's only shy when it comes to this.
Yeah, this is the only thing I don't like to do.
Thank you guys for welcoming me back with open arms like you did in April, and it's just a thrill to be here, and I hope I can help you guys out the best I can, okay?
Thank you. Okay, going on with the number four is approval of minutes. Five is treasurer's report. Six is CCB audits. Seven is fundraising report. Eight is publications committee. Nine is report on Newell Perry Trust Fund. 10 is report on Ellen Murphy Trust Fund. 11 is 2008 CTEVH conference. 12 is spring 2008 convention bids. 13 is Transition Council website. 14 is CCB convention online registration. 15 is ACB legislative seminar. 16 is Caltrans litigation update. 17 is public comment. And 18, we will have a short general session after the end of the board meeting. Executive session. Excuse me. General session. Executive session. Excuse me. just a little word. Okay. Ruth Druding, are you in the room?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We have with us, we are honored to have. We are honored to have, I believe, are you not the president, current president?
No,
or no? Okay. Second vice president. Well, she's good as president to me. Ruth Druding from the Arizona Council of the Blind. And she is a great lady. Let's give her a big hand. And actually, she's a member, so you better court her if you're up for election, because she's now a member at large and she's going to vote. So be nice to her. And I don't think Marlena is here, but you are here. All right. So we also have, she's got a lot of different hats, but she's the secretary of the American Council of the Blind, and she's probably something in the Washington Council of the Blind. Secretary.
Please don't say too many good things about me. You'll ruin my image.
I'll try not to do that. And she is just a wonderful person and our ACB radio live streamer for the weekend, Marlena Lieberg.
Yeah.
Marlena is never speechless, so we don't have to worry about hearing from her. We know we will.
Let me say this about that.
I knew you would. Okay. Finally, I want to take one thing out of order. We want to make one more introduction, and he's going to say a couple words about something I think that's really of importance for us all to hear. And that is, we have with us the president of, actually, he's with a group of his folks. We have just a tremendous guy. So many of us have gone over to his state and had a wonderful time with him and all of the Hawaii Association of the Blind. We have the president of that organization, Warren Toyama.
Yeah.
Warren, you want to say a few words?
Thank you, Jeff. From Hawaii, aloha.
Aloha.
You said it better than our people. The message I have today to the board is for the board to consider the idea of creating a relationship, a sister state relationship between California and Hawaii. Now, I call it a sweet deal, because you remember your bags of sugar, it says C and H. California, Hawaii. Okay? That's what the C and H on that bag of sugar stands for. And what Hawaii stands to gain by bringing our people to your convention and you select some up-and-coming member of CCB to come to Hawaii's convention is Hawaii will gain by the experience and diversity of this organization as far as the blind movement is concerned. We have a small group, and we're isolated. And so we need to get into the swing of what is happening in a greater world. And we feel that CCB affords the perfect place for us to be able to experience a bigger picture of what's happening. And I would hope that the board can work it out that you will be serving a great need for Hawaii, and we think perhaps we can serve in the capacity of energizing or inspiring your people who come over to Hawaii to do bigger and greater things for California. And this is no exaggeration, because inspiration is not measured by size. And we believe that, as I told Jeff, that Hawaii is to stand to gain from this relationship. We are prepared to pay for our own expense as we come over, hotels and the other fees. And you take care of your fees when you come over. And our fees are lower than yours, I can tell you. And our restaurants are swifter than yours, I can tell you. So, with that, I would like to encourage the board to give it a try and see what happens. And with that, thank you very much for the time on your program.
Thank you very much, Warren. It's great. You know, those of us who have been over there to that affiliate and who have been over to other affiliates, I can't tell you, for example, how much I have learned, and Marlena knows, because I've told them 100 times how much I've learned from Washington going to their conventions, and what we've learned from Hawaii and other states. And I just want to say, it's not something we're working on this evening, but I want to make it very clear to this board that it needs to be a priority for our board to send some up-and-coming people to the extent we can over to Hawaii to get from that affiliate to learn some of what I and others have been fortunate enough to learn, and to be able to give back what we in California have and the great things that we've done, and to share that with Hawaii. So we will certainly set that as a priority for next year. Okay, thank you very much. Yes. Yes, we do. Warren is accompanied by his lovely wife, Julia, Miles Tamashiro, who I've served on committees with, Norman Ota, who bears my sad burden of having a significant other that loves to shop and who probably put me into the poorhouse last spring, and Keith, what is your last name, Keith?
Okasawa.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get it. But Keith is a new member of the Hawaii Association of the Blind, and we want to welcome to the California Council of the Blind. So welcome all of you. Okay. Next item is approval of the minutes, and I would entertain a motion to approve the...
Mr. President.
Yes.
This is Chris. I would like to move that we approve the... I'd like to make a motion for purposes of discussion that we approve the pre-convention board meeting minutes for April 12th, 2007. And if I might, I would like to request a few minor corrections.
Okay, there's a motion and a second, and now the floor is open for discussion, and I'll recognize Chris first.
Okay, thank you. These are pretty non-controversial, and Rhonda, these are great minutes. Thank you for doing them, and don't take my corrections as any kind of criticism. Technical writing just has done this terrible thing to me. Anyway, in number four, Marlena is M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A. In number 10, paragraph 2, the second sentence I can't even find my own braille place here. It says revenue less expenses total, and I'd like to add the words a negative $47,440. Right now, it's the amount is shown as a positive amount. It's negative $47,440. again, I think this is a friendly amendment on board motion 0716. The first sentence reads, Rhonda moved adoption of the projected expenses. I'd like to add the word moving. Projected moving expenses, so that the motion is entirely clear.
Okay. Turn my mic back on here. Okay. Any other items? I have one. If I can find it again. Okay. I would, under number 15, I would suggest deleting the sentence that says the consensus of the board is to table the matter until the next convention committee meeting, because then it's followed by the motion that essentially referred it back. So, Ron, if you don't object, then I would suggest we delete that sentence. The second sentence, the one right before the motion. Okay, any other discussion, objections, amendments, etc.? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion carried. Okay. Do we have a motion with respect to the May 16th teleconference minutes?
Move the adoption.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Do we have a motion with respect to the August 29th, 2007 teleconference call?
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is there discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
Okay, now, remember, the motion carries, sorry. Remember that there will be summaries of these minutes published. And in addition, anyone can request in their format of choice, I'm missing a word there, in their format of choice, a copy of any set of our minutes from the office, and it will certainly be given to them. Any member can request that. Okay, I want to introduce very quickly, because we're trying to move along, but she's just come in. A lot of you have already met her. She's been hustling around here. With Mary Lou and Pinky working hard, filling in the breach a little bit for Ed as well, so that we can give him the rest he needs. Our new employee, who we've now had on for about a month and a half, I guess, Diana Sandel. Welcome. Baptism by fire for Diana. That's the way we do it in this organization. So, okay. We're on item five, Treasurer's Report, Chris Gray.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Are you prepared for a long Treasurer's Report or a short Treasurer's Report? Well, I'll try and make it as short as I can. There are a number of things we want to go over and that I want you to be aware of, both as a board and those who have shown the interest in CCB to come here tonight and be a part of this meeting of the CCB Board of Directors. Let me begin by focusing, if I might, on the revenue side of the budget. And where appropriate, here and on the expense side, I will combine some numbers. And if there are any questions, don't hesitate to stop me and ask right then or later. And I may have to consult a moment or two here now and then with my colleague and prior treasurer of CCB, Peter Pardini, because of some irregularities in the Braille that we're looking at tonight. And board members, if you have questions about these, ask me now or ask later, but we do have a few irregularities to be looked at before we issue this final report. But starting out with the good news, because we all like good news, and there's no bad news in this report tonight. Certainly no news that we weren't aware of at the beginning of 2007. But starting off with the good news or the best news, let's talk about the revenue that's come into CCB this year. And it is significant, and I think we ought to be proud of that. We have, to begin with, REW and Associates. We have projected for the entire year $36,000, and as of the end of September, we're at $30,971. A quarter to go, I think that's pretty good. TechLink, Sanderson Group, we projected $36,000, we're at $32,000. Universal Thrift Store, projected $1,350, and we're at $1,720, so we're even a little bit ahead there. Vehicle Donation Processing Center, we projected $70,000, we're sitting at $33,987. So we're quite a ways down on that. Have been for some time. We were optimistic, but clearly, we have some work to do to bring in a significant new revenue stream to CCB. I think we all know that, but I just highlight it here for those who are here, especially who are not on the board. Affiliate chapter contributions, we hope for 2,250. Right now we're sitting at 650. Affiliate chapter dues, projected 6,000, actual 4,855. Members at large, projected 800, have brought in 290. Life membership dues, projected 1,000, brought in 1,120. Those of you who are not life members, Jeff and I and others put ourselves out as examples this year and became life members, and I would invite, encourage, and tell me a way I can inspire you to become a life member of CCB. Convention. We projected 30,000 in revenue from the convention, and so far are looking at 19,227. Bequests, projected 40,000. The actual is 1,533. Now, here's a contributions item, and in here we have general contributions and things like that. I'm going to just give you a bottom line total, if I might, on contributions. We have hoped for 2,000, and thus far have brought in 6,400. Nice number. Scholarships, again, if it's acceptable to all of you, I'm going to consolidate scholarships, and as soon as I find the number, the actual number, all the only number I have here in Braille is 150.
No, it's Chris, we've budgeted, expected 12,200, we've taken $400.
We expected 12,200, so far have taken in $200.
$400.
Now, 4105 is public contributions, and under that we have things like the Fogarty Scholarship, CCB Scholarship Fund, and so we projected 200, so far have taken in 50. The total for scholarships, projection 12,200, and 400 is our figure so far. Okay, now looking at grants, I'm going to try and give you the consolidated figure for grants again, if I can do that because of the way the Braille works. The total for grants, we're looking at 5,693, but for some reason on this printout, there isn't a total for the projection. On fundraisers, we have a hope for $15,000, and so far have taken in a total of $9,025. Legal settlements, we projected $25,000 and have taken in $30,000. Interest, banks, savings, CDs, the projection is $7,500. We've taken in $3,123. Investment revenue.
That's the budgeted figure, $35,000. The investment revenue is on the bottom of the report.
Oh, I see, $35,000. What is this? $3,300. Oh, I see. To put this figure all together, our total revenue we projected for the year $320,100. Thus far, we're looking at $183,748. Moving to the expense side of the budget, we projected $121,000, and thus far, through the end of September, we're at $76,146. The medical expense, I'm going to try and give you a bottom line on that. We projected $22,000, and right now we're sitting at $15,211. We have a category of miscellaneous expense, things like bank service charges, small expenses, and we projected $1,500. We're at $1,020. Then we have various types of payroll expenses, payroll tax, and things like that. And for that, we projected $10,700. Thus far, we have spent $7,754. Under the area of account service, let's see, we projected $8,300. We've spent $4,050. For the audits, and here's a tough one for us this year, but it won't be so tough next year. We will spend before the end of the year $33,000. Thus far, we have spent $11,000. This is catching us up on the audits. Legal advocacy, $1,000. We've spent $300. Now, travel and transportation, I'm going to try and condense that and give you a bottom line total again. The projected expense is $5,000, and we've already spent $5,024. So we're all staying in L.A. after the convention till the end of the year. We have various telephone expenses, and we budgeted $14,000, and we've spent $13,908. If you don't mind me interjecting a few notes in here about expenses, we have found a way, working with Ed and him working with the phone company and so forth, we have significantly reduced, probably by two-thirds, our phone expenses since we moved to Sacramento. So I think we're going to look at a much lower figure for that next year. Public relations, we allocated $1,500. We only spent $193, but don't tell Bernice. Oh, isn't public? I thought public relations was part of your expense too. I'm sorry. Oh, don't tell artists. Okay. So in the area of membership development, we've allocated $1,000, but we show no expenditures in that area yet. For rent, we allocated $22,500, spent $18,134. Office insurance, $1,200, and we've spent $1,683. Utilities, we've allocated $1,500, spent $954. For workers' compensation, allocated $1,300, spent $986. Now, for Board of Directors insurance, allocated $2,200, spent $2,173. We have a number of BC expenses here, and I'm going to see about giving you a consolidated number for those so they make a little more sense to all of us. We can go over individual ones if you want to, but the total for the BC, we've allocated $10,000 for the year for printing, and spent so far $4,365. What's that?
Not all of the bills are in.
Oh, I know that. I know that. For the office move to Sacramento, we allocated $11,000, and we spent, as far as we know, and I'll bet this is a nearly final figure, $10,584. Stayed pretty well on budget there. Office supplies, $3,000. We spent $1,884. Postage, $2,000. We've spent $1,502. Equipment rental, $2,100. We've spent $1,413. Service contracts, $4,350. We've spent $2,936. Office equipment expense, $3,000. We've spent $986. Repair and maintenance, $2,000. We've spent $1,054. Board of directors, various expenses that I will consolidate for you, and we allocated $5,000 and have spent $4,115. Committee expenses, $2,500. We spent $565. Dues to organizations, $4,100. We spent $3,450. Conferences and seminars, we allocated $16,000 and we spent $13,399. Now we have, for the scholarships, we allocated $30,000. We spent $19,750. Grants to organizations, $6,290. We spent $631. Grants to individuals, and here we look at Ellen Murphy. We've spent. We don't really allocate per se because Ellen Murphy is an interest-bearing fund and it's handled slightly differently than other CCB funds. We've spent $10,572. And in other grants to individuals, we allocated $5,000, have spent $4,611. So the total there is a little misleading because we allocated $5,000, but we spent $15,183. But don't forget the Ellen Murphy Fund, making up the vast majority of that expense. For the convention, as you all know, conventions are not not inexpensive. We allocated an expenditure of $65,000 and thus far have spent $34,621. Fundraising expenses and reimbursements, $8,000 allocated, $2,828 spent. Payroll expenses, we have spent $11,078. But I don't see the allocation here. This is one of those Braille irregularities I was telling you about. This gives us a total expense. We budgeted this year's budget $428,640, and thus far have spent $290,000. And the revenue less expenses, the budget this year allowed for expenses over revenue of $108,540, and right now we're sitting at $106,252. However, as always, we have this category, and it's been kind to us this year. It isn't always kind to us, but it's called other revenue. And in the other revenue, we have things like short-term capital gains. We have things like long-term capital gains. We have interest on operating accounts. We have interest from UBS Financial and from Solomon Smith Barney, a number of other accounts that we get interest on, CCB endowments, et cetera, et cetera. And without going through all of those accounts, because they are lengthy and considerable and a little bit complicated sometimes as well, we end up with a net other income of $60,682. The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, is that we do have this potential. The board voted and the membership approved to have expenses over revenue of $108,540. Right now, we have spent, when you include the other revenue, $45,571. So as you see, we are spending more than we're making, but the picture isn't entirely a difficult picture. I'd like to also say that we've been working hard to reorient a number of accounts. I want to thank and acknowledge President Jeff Tom, Ed Branch, and Peter Pardini. We have spent more time sitting in the lobbies of banks since this move to Sacramento than you can imagine. And it is paying off in the second half of 2007. We have moved a number of accounts from older interest-bearing instruments of as low as around 1% to accounts that are getting as much as 5.5% to 5.75%. This is for our liquid assets. We're working hard to move other money and to reorganize other money in ways that maximize CCB's ability to make money on the money we have, as well as projecting new revenues. I do think that we must be cautious in our expenditures. I think that we will doubtless have to be more conservative in 2008. This is just your treasurer talking, but I'm recommending that we must do that in 2008. But I also want to be sure that you walk away from this meeting understanding that the California Council of the Blind is an organization that is in reasonably good shape financially. We have total assets today, ladies and gentlemen, of $1,568,249. We are not an impoverished organization. We're an organization that needs to work on new revenue streams. We need to guard the money we have. But the California Council of the Blind remains a great organization of the blind with considerable resources to use on behalf of blind Californians and other blind people around the world. Mr. President, that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Very excellent. Yes. I just want to make a couple of comments before we have a motion and then open up for discussion. I want to make two acknowledgments. First, I want to obviously acknowledge not only the time and effort, but also the wisdom that Chris has put into trying to shore up some of our revenue sources. And we have indeed spent, we've gotten to know each other better sitting in those bank lobbies, though, so that's been a good thing.
That's true.
But other than that, and we still have some more bank lobbies we have to see into. But we're getting there. We're getting the accounts straight the way we want them to be. And the second thing is, with respect to the moving expenses, although on the one hand there were some expenses that we shouldn't have had to incur that were little glitches, on the other hand, there were some expenses that we might have had to incur had it not been for some volunteers. We had volunteer help from the Pioneers, and most of all I want to thank, although he's not here, I want to thank on his behalf, I want to thank Lonnie King. We had some electrical work that I think could have cost us at least $1,000 to perform at the last minute before we were going to be able to move in and get all the computers and everything hooked up. And he stepped up to the plate and got it done in a very yeoman and very professional effort, as we knew he could. And so I want to personally thank him for his efforts in that regard. So, okay, is there a motion and a second for the Treasurer's Report acceptance?
Yes, I move.
Somebody moved and somebody seconded. I'll let the Secretary figure that one out. Discussion. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, I'm going to give the floor back to Chris on to discuss the CCB audits. And I'll probably tag team along with him a little bit on this one.
Oh, good. Well, no, the audits have gone very well. We've used the same auditor that we used last year, and he's done quite a lot of work before the Sacramento move as well as after the move. And I think that, I have no doubt in my mind that he's showing that CCB has done well in terms of how we've kept the books and how we've done things. And I expect that we'll have all of our audits completed and signed through 2006 by the end of the year. Now, auditors are a strange kind of cat sometimes, and they love to get in there and look through your books, and if you've done something that they feel could be done a different way, they want to tell you about it, and they're often right. They often can approach things from a little different perspective than we might as an organization of the blind. We've done business in a certain way for a long time, and we're used to it. We know each other, and to be honest, I think sometimes we treat each other better than some other organizations might treat one another. Maybe that's idealistic on my part, but it's just what I happen to believe. But there are things that we can do to safeguard ourselves, to safeguard our staff from accusation, and most importantly, to protect the California Council of the Blind from the kinds of things we hear that go on today. I'm sure all of you read all the time about fraud, personal identity theft. Well, organizational identity theft could occur as well. So we need to put the right kind of safeguards in place to protect us, and the auditor has recommended a number of them. I don't necessarily feel that any of those recommendations require board action. We may pass out some circular type information to let you know if we're making a major change in how things are done. But we're talking here about procedural matters for the most part. For example, we have a system in place where we have Ed sharing the handling of mail with the assistant. It's done to protect both of them. It protects the assistant who may receive money and Ed who may deposit money. So it's a safeguard we put in place to run CCB in a business-like fashion. We're talking about some minor changes in how we work with the Chan and Eng, who do much of our accounting work and tax forms, so that we're sure that Peter, who is working all the time, helping to balance the books, reviewing the print statements and so on, has protections in place for him in the processes that are undertaken. So our auditor has really looked through CCB's books, CCB's procedures. Audits are expensive, but I think that a lot of good comes from them, and I hope that these remarks will convey to you some of that tonight. Jeff, you want to add anything?
Yeah, not a whole lot. I will say that I had a good discussion with our auditors, and it was a good two-way dialogue. I informed them a little bit about how we don't always agree and do things in the same way that they do, and they informed me of their views, and it was a healthy exchange. I think in the end, they have to admit that perhaps their way isn't the only way of looking at things. So I may have had an impact on but accountants are, you know, I don't want to use that horrible term in front of Peter, but being counters are what they are, and so, but they do have good suggestions, and it is important that we listen to them, and we are going to listen to them and implement those things that will be to our benefit as an organization and to individuals who work for the organization. I know the 2005 audit is done. The only reason we don't have the final audit in our hands, I don't think, is because of this management letter that they're going to send out to us that tells us what they think we ought to do, the things that we've sort of gone over with you now. And then the 2006 audit, although it's not done, they've done, I believe, a lot of the work for it. So I don't know what your view is, Chris, but I don't see why we shouldn't have both audits before the end of the year, as promised.
I don't think so. I think we're almost certain to have it.
Okay.
I'm going
to... Peter, question.
And you're working with the auditors. Do you basically think that we'll get a fairly clean opinion letter?
Well, that depends on the definition of what you mean by fairly clean. There's nothing really that I feel will be damaging to CCB in any way. I don't think there's anything in the letter that would hurt us, for example, for going out and getting a line of credit if we had to do it. I do think there are recommendations in there that could be viewed as criticisms if you wanted to take them in that light. I don't think they're meant in that light. I think that the trouble the auditors are finding themselves in is that they're working today under such different requirements because of the Enron scandal that it's almost incumbent upon them to find every tiny detail that could ever come back to haunt them about us to tell us about. So we're going to see some of that, but I don't think there is anything that's really negative in the audits, no.
Well, just to give you an example, Peter, and the rest of the board, one of their recommendations is probably going to be in the management letter that we use this, I forget what they call it, lockbox or something, that's the real estate term. But essentially, instead of money going directly to CCB for donations, it would have to go to some bank. And although I don't have a problem with having an alternate method so that you could send it to either place, I think we'd end up losing donations if people couldn't send their, you know, it would be confusing because we have, you know, we're not talking about big donors here that are sending in, you know, $10,000, $20,000. We're talking about people sending in $50 or $15 or whatever. And so I think for us, it would not be a winning situation and it would cost us money to implement as well. So it's, you know, for a larger nonprofit corporation, it is a worthwhile protection that should be implemented in many cases. But for us, it doesn't necessarily make sense unless it was something that would cost us some way, you know, down the road. You know, if you don't, you know, if you can't get grants unless you have this, then obviously we might decide to do it. But ordinarily, but I can, in all good conscience, suggest that we implement a recommendation that I think would conceivably lose us money. Any other discussion? Peter?
Will the board get a draft copy of the audit before it's the final audit's approved?
No. No. The board will certainly receive a copy of the audit if they want to, but it's my view that the president has the authority and should approve the audit. Now, that doesn't mean that the recommendations in the audit letter would not come to the board.
You'll definitely get the audit letter, and if there's a problem, if there's a reason that the audit letter requires you to see the draft audit, if that had something to do with it, and we had to pass that out first, we would definitely do that. What we're most concerned about is getting that final audit, but if we need to pass that out, you know, we certainly will.
Well, I mean, I'd really like...
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, Peter. I mean, we're not trying to...
draft out before you guys...
Okay, I don't have a problem with that.
You sign off on it.
Sure.
Just because I've... You know, we've worked with Alex Wong for a number of years, and I'd
sure
like to see what he's proposed.
Not a problem.
You know, maybe this is the way to look at it. Given that Peter, you were the treasurer during those years. It certainly would make sense for you to look at the audit. But I don't think that CCB wants to make it a practice or a procedure that the board or even subsets of the board are reviewing and critiquing the audit. That's not what an audit's about.
And we definitely don't want to slow it down. We need to get these audits done.
That's not my intention.
Yeah. No, I know.
I mean, I'm just...
Okay.
So maybe some recommendations we can make before the final audit is approved that you may not have thought of.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Okay. We don't really need a motion on this. This was not a report that requires a motion. So we're going to go on to item number 7, fundraising report. For that, I'm going to bring on our fundraising chair, Rhonda King.
Okay. Fundraising this year. Between April and October, I think we already determined what the funds were that we raised by spring. But so far, what we have going is our fall sweepstakes. And we normally buy 10,000 tickets. And on average, we've looked over the past few years, and on average, we've only sold approximately 6,000. So we had to find a new printer for the tickets. And so we made a judgment call depending on or determined by the cost of the tickets. So we actually only purchased 6,000 tickets. And lo and behold, I think we've sold every one of them. Now we have no tickets to sell here. But that's good. That's okay. Because we'll know next time. This was a learning curve. But that means that all the chapters and affiliates that have sold tickets will recover half of that. So if we sold all 6,000, there's 3,000 going out, 3,000 for the CCB. Anyway, that's our big one this time. Our grand prize is a $500 shopping spree to Walmart. Our second prize is a Victor reading stream valued at $329. We have Access Ingenuity. Okay, wait. The Victor reading screen was donated by Sweetman Systems. And we also have Access Ingenuity has donated a airline ticket. And I believe that's valued at... Well, I don't know. Wait. No, I don't think I have a value on that one. Anyway, then we have the two Disneyland passes that you can use at either Disneyland park. And that's valued at $126. And our last prize is a baking dish donated by Pampered Chef, valued at $32. So that's going to be a pretty good one this year. And some of the other things that we're looking into, I'm on this website, this fundraising website, and I've found this really neat idea, and it's on how to write a story and to present it through conflict resolution. And so what we're doing is we're going to start looking into the different categories of CCB where we use money, and that could be anywhere from membership to scholarships to the crisis committee to the advocacy committee. I recently wrote a story for the Ellen Murphy Fund that they're looking into. It's a fictional story, but stories such as what I wrote actually happen in life. So we're considering writing true stories, but we're going to present them in a way that we won't have to, you know, get releases or anything like that. But they're still actual stories. And hopefully we can use those for public relations and draw in some contributions from outside CCB through this fashion. And, well, Jeff mentioned the MMS. That's still ongoing for ACB, and you can have a percentage of that money, you know, put over to CCB. And let's see. I think that's about it for fundraising.
Okay.
The only other thing we're looking at is something for next spring. And I don't know how we're going to do that, but that's going to require a lot of public relations. And, we're hoping to bring in $50,000 next year if we can do this. So, anyway, that's it.
I'm going to hand that mic down to me, and then we'll take just a couple quick comments. Okay, just a couple quick things and we'll open it up for discussion. One thing which took me forever to track down, the fundraising committee wanted, and finally today, interestingly enough, I finally nailed this. It'll just take a little tiny bit of work, hardly any, next January. The fundraising committee wanted us to get involved and be put in the booklet for next year's United California State Employees campaign. And I have finally got that to where it will be done in January, so next fall. We should be able to start bringing in some money for that particular campaign. When you're in the book, it's much better than somebody just writing in the name of the charity, because you just get a little small percentage. But when you're in the book, they have to send you the amount of money that people want donated. So it's a real big deal. So we're going to hope, even if it's only $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, it really has the potential to do something for us if we can, let state employees know. All you rehab counselors out there, for example, you can donate to us. Right, Jerry?
Yeah, or legislative analysts.
Hey, yeah, I don't work for them, so that's okay. But that's right. Okay. The other thing, yes?
Will you go ahead and mention the GT Trends website? I forgot.
Yes, I will. We also have except I don't remember the website, the actual URL.
I think it's www.ccbnet.gttrends.org.
We have a website, a travel website, which has most of the major airlines. It doesn't have Southwest, but has most of the others. And if you go on that website and you book your tickets through it, and its accessibility is pretty good. It's not perfect, but it's a lot better than many of them that I've tried to navigate around. We will get a share of the proceeds for tickets. And we're doing this on a pilot project basis. The board's going to analyze it next spring. And we really, really could use your business to help CCB. The other thing I was going to say is that and just sort of in preliminary discussions and thinking about this, I sort of discussed it very briefly with people. But I think now that things are starting to settle down in the office a little more, I'm going to be able to allocate more time, gradually more and more time, to give staff to work with the fundraising committee and others to try and ramp up the fundraising efforts that the committee puts into place. We know we need it. There's no question about it. It's not that it isn't an important priority, but there are obviously a lot of other priorities as well, but we can't ignore it, and I think the time has come to really start to focus more of our personnel hours on it. And I think we can begin, now that we've gotten the first convention, now that we're starting to get people trained, now that we've got a unified staff, that next year we can begin to gradually allocate more hours to fundraising. So that's the only comment that I have. Okay, any questions of yes?
This is Gene. I was wondering, have we had ourselves included again into the book that for attorneys that want to, people who are trying to look for write-offs in charities to donate money, and also for wills and trusts? I believe that it's a past board meeting had been discussed that we were no longer in the book and that was something we were going to do. To get back into the book?
I can't remember. Gene, I can't remember whether we did or not. I can get back to the board after the convention and send out an email, and if it's the board's view that we needed to get back in, we will. We have, of course, and we'll probably do another one after convention. It's been several months now. But we have, of course, a couple times a year been sending out bunches of letters. And the last time we made it, we really tried to personalize it far more by discussing a CCB member to attorneys in estate planning. And you never know whether one of those is going to hit. The odds are not good, but when it hits, it hits. So we will still do those a couple times a year. And I will get back to the board on the book. I know what you're talking about, and I just don't remember whatever happened with that. Any other questions? If not, is there a move to accept the fundraising committee report?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. Okay. Publications committee. I'm going to recognize Bernice Kandarian and her cast of thousands, she tells me. to give little bits of various items that she feels the board needs to become aware of. So, okay. Well, let's. Should we go on to the next item? We'll do it. We'll do it. Okay. Richard, I believe, will be next. Okay, Richard will be, report on Newell Perry, and if you have, I don't know, will you have Alan Murphy too?
I do. Hang on a second.
You're on.
All right. I'm just reading the email that Kathy sent me, so I can get the figures right.
Yeah, don't tell Alan that Richard is doing this, or she'll come back and haunt us all.
As of September 30th, the Newell Perry Trust balance held by Smith Barney is $200,316.24. This fund has performed beautifully throughout the year, and that was as of September 30th. Fund has made $22,003.83 this year. So it's an endowment fund, and we have made no expenditures so far this year. Okay, the Alan Murphy Fund.
Could I ask a question about
this? Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you. And I know you may not have the answer to this, and I want to preface my question, actually. Clearly, this is something that we should be spending from only as a last resort. It's an endowment fund. We don't need to spend out of it now, and nor do I want to. But I guess my question is, and if you don't have the answer, maybe we can get it for the board. What was the original corpus? Let's say we had just a disastrous year. What could we, next year, somehow or other, what could we spend out of this if we actually had to dip into it? Praise the Lord that we never
Well, this is at the board's discretion with the trustees, myself, and Pat and Kathy. So I guess based on our recommendations to the board, it would be ultimately the board's decision.
Okay. So it's the trustees' decision. And what was the original, do you know what the original corpus was? Because obviously you're never going to want to go below that.
I don't, but this fund did do well this year, and that was as of September 30th, but it could take a dip too.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Okay. Thank you. I'm just interested in finding out what the original corpus was. Because that's all.
Jeff, I think it's stated in our 2003 or 2004 audit. In the notes to the financial statements. So I think if we look there, we could find it.
Okay. Thank you.
And when all else fails, Jeff, of course, we'll ask Kathy, and she'll know it immediately. Ready for the Alan Murphy Fund?
Oh yes, we need a motion. Sorry, a motion to accept the report. Newell Perry. There's a motion and a second. I don't know, Chris. I think. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Motion carried.
Hey, Rhonda, just for your information and for the board, I'll forward this email, which is not confidential, to the board list so you can get the figures right, and you'll have that. I'll do that right now. Okay. Alan Murphy. Let's see. The Alan Murphy Fund is held at UBS Financial Services. Our balance there as of September 30th is $284,552.50. Once again, $284,552.50. This is a pretty good, I'm reading Kathy's words here, this is a pretty good balance considering that we have assisted many women during this year. We are finding that when people are homeless and obviously do not have a permanent address, they are unable to apply for SSI and other state assistance. We are working hard to find a solution to this problem, which appears to be statewide. And her last sentence, she says, we hope to be able to report to you at the next convention on perhaps CCB for some assistance with legislation. Should this appear to be the way we should proceed? And Kathy could not let this report go, Jeff, by basically signing off by saying she hopes the board meeting will go a lot shorter with her and Mitch not presiding on the board with a smile, Kathy.
Chris and I had discussed that very point an hour or two ago, did we not?
So there you go.
Thank you very much. Yep. We have a motion for acceptance of that report.
So moved.
Is there a second? Two seconds. All in favor say aye. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Okay, we are now On item 11, moving right along.
Is Bernice back?
Oh, okay, good. We'll go back to item 9 to Bernice. It's item 8, yeah, sorry. 8, 9, what's the number?
Is Bonnie Rennie in the room? Yes? Okay. Okay, good evening. Sorry for the interruption. I want to talk first of all this evening about the Blind Californian. The fall issue was a real struggle. First of all, as many of you know, the print edition was already to be shipped to Sacramento for mailing when there was a pipe that burst at the printers. They had a considerable flood, and they had to totally reprint the large print edition. The master tape for the cassette edition, the tape broke. And then for those of you who received the Braille edition, as you know, it came as a puzzle. A few lines of this article and a few lines of that article. We were trying to test your ability to read. President Jeff Tom, after not receiving any responses from Carol Jimenez, we left her several messages and she did not return our calls. We asked President Tom to communicate directly with Les Docker, president, I think is president of the Braille Institute, and he was very quick in responding to us that they pride themselves in quality Braille. They have identified the problem. They have put fail-safes in place that it won't occur again, and that they were reprinting the fall Blind Californian Braille edition at no cost to the council for distribution. So if you haven't received yours yet, I think some people have received their corrected one already. Some have not. And if you haven't, please let the office know so that we can be sure that you do get your corrected copy. It had a lot of good information in it. And unfortunately, with it all mixed up, I don't know if people were able to really glean the information. Okay, I'm going to ask my microphone stand here to... I have some detailed information, and I want to take a few minutes to make the board thoroughly aware. I haven't done this for a couple of years to bring you up to date. So, Rhonda, I don't think there's any detail in particular that you need to put down about this, but I did want the board to know these things. Okay. The winter edition, there were 147 Braille copies plus 8 extras, which would meant 155 were produced. The large print, 366, plus 6-7 sighted people received the Blind Californian, plus 7 extras for a total of 440 copies. The cassette edition, 347, plus 3 sighted people received the cassette edition. That meant 350 cassettes were produced. The disc was 49, and the total for the winter edition was 994.
Bernice, do you want me to report on the email version of that?
Yes, you're going to do it by... Okay, go ahead.
Well, as of 2 minutes ago, my laptop told me that we have 105 people subscribing to the email version of the PC. And a lot of those people have written to Ed in recent months saying they want to stop receiving their preferred format and only receive email.
Very good. Okay, now, the spring edition, the Braille was 157 plus 3 extra for 160. The large print was 370 plus 72 sighted recipients plus 8 extras equals 450. Oh, I don't think we do. That meant there were 450. The cassette was 352 plus 3 sided, 355. The disc, there were 50, and that meant the total for the spring edition was 1015. Okay, the summer edition, the Braille was 167 plus 3 extra for a total of 170. Large print, 394 plus 81 sided, plus 5 extra equals 480. The cassette, 372 plus 3 for the sided equals 375. The disc is 50, and for a total of 1075. Okay, the fall edition, Braille, 164 plus 6X, 6 extras, excuse me. this is a little challenging.
Sorry.
Equals 170, and large print, 391 plus 81 for sighted recipients, plus 8 extra, 480, cassette, 366, plus 3 sighted readers, equals 369, disc, 48, for a total of 1067. Now, the grand total for the year, because those are the four issues for 2007, Braille, 635, plus the 20 extras, equals 655. Large print, 1521, plus 301 sighted readers, plus 28 extras, 1850 is the total. The cassette, 1437, plus 12 sighted readers, equals 1449. The disc is 197. And the total, the grand total is 4,151 for the year. Okay, if you subtract off the extras, that there were actually 4,100 evens mailed out to regular recipients. Okay, now the winter in the Braille edition, the 155 copies was $756.40, which equals $4.88 a copy. The large print was 440 copies, 1363.72, which is just a hundredth of a point under $3.10 a copy. Okay, now, the spring, the Braille edition was 160 for 780.80. Again, 4.88 per issue, per copy. The large print was 450 for 1394.72. Again, $3.10 a copy. Now, I brought you some quotes. I checked with three major Braille presses, and I brought you some quotes just so that you get a full picture here. National Braille Press, Eileen Curran, gave me a quote on Jiffy Braille, $8.86 a copy. Proofread copy, $9.96 a copy. Braille International, Jamie Reddick. I don't know what happened to Phyllis Campana, but Jamie Reddick is now in charge. Is $9.19 a copy. And by the way, they do the Braille monitor. Clovernook, Charlotte Begley, gave us a quote of $6.95 a copy. I guess what I would, Jeff, I don't know whether you would like to just have a consensus or some kind of a affirming vote or whatever, as to whether we prefer to stay with the Braille Institute.
Okay. Let's open it for discussion.
Okay. I have more parts of the report, but this is the BC part.
Okay. Any discussion on the what we want to change from Braille Institute?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think we probably can do this by general consensus because the rate is clearly far lower than any other quote from a major Braille press in the country. I would only like to observe and ask Bernice, as chair of our committee dealing with publications, that I'm very disappointed in the formatting quality of the program they produce for this convention. And I would ask that the publications committee look at this program and have a real strong talk with Braille Institute about the significant lack of appropriate formatting in the Braille convention program.
You read my mind, Chris. It's on my agenda later down.
Okay.
And it's one of the items, Jeff, that I hadn't had a chance, an
sure.
opportunity to speak with you
about. The only thing I will say is that the one thing that was not their fault was the absence of the rooms in the Braille.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a file problem. It was
sure.
not their
sure.
error. But yes, you're correct, Gene. Chris. And I will say that I think we now have an in with them to do that because Les Stalker, and I was frankly surprised. He was very appalled that at the problem that we brought to his attention, and they got a letter out to me. That, you know, he called me, and the letter was the next day right after that, mm-hmm. and they immediately reprinted that thing. And they diagnosed the problem. So I think that we can now dialogue with them and show them that, look, you do have some, you know, major errors. We also, just for information purposes, the hotel had a problem with their vendor on the menus, and part of it was some file concerns, again, dealing with some Adobe issues. But Braille Institute essentially could not help them. Junior Blind of America, however, was able to help them because they had sufficient expertise to get around it. And believe me, we owe a great debt of gratitude to JBA and to Bob Sweetman in particular for the job they did with the menus. But the point is, for this discussion, they had the technical expertise. And so obviously we need to dialogue more with Braille. I think they do want to do a good job, but we need to clue them into the areas where they're deficient. And I think we can do that over the next year.
Okay. The next part of my report we had a publications committee meeting last Thursday, and these are some of the things to look for in the BC in the near future. Richard Retta has agreed to do a column on. People actually doing job search and entering into the workforce. This would be the other side of the articles that Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker does on the Career Connection. And so what we are going to do, Kathy's been doing her column for 10 years now. And she says she's running out of material and she's starting to repeat. So what? And I said, you know, 10 years to repeat from 10 years ago is okay. But what we're going to do in the next issue of the BC is both Richard and Kathy will have articles, and then the committee will meet again and decide whether we want to have both of them in each issue or whether we want to alternate them every other issue to give Kathy a little break. So that's one thing. Rob Turner, are you in the room? No? Rob has offered to do the Around the State column, and we appreciate him taking that on. And Louis Herrera, are you in the room? Am I batting 1,000? Louis has written several articles that are very long and highly technical. So what we have worked out with Louis is that there will be a technology committee page on the website, and we will post his articles there. And he is going to consult with some of the members of the technology committee and get them to write articles that are a little less technical to put in the Tech Talk column of the BC. And Winifred Downing has agreed to do a column on Braille happenings, so in all kinds of things, whatever she has related to Braille. And the other thing that we thought we might try is we're going to start trying to do some reprint now and then from like 10 years ago and see how that goes. We need, for the bulletin board column, we really would like somebody to take that on and or we need people to contribute items that could go in that column. So please, if you have anything, send it in to Mike Keithley, editor. And if anybody's interested in taking that on, we would really be interested in talking with you. Okay, the CCB brochures. We have had some stickers printed that have the updated address and contact information, and those can be requested from the CCB office. However, if you have brochures that do not have the updated information on them, please don't throw them away because those things are expensive. Yeah. And just send them back to the CCB office so that they can be the stickers can they can be updated with the new stickers. Okay, failing sight and the family plight. Bonnie, are you here? Okay. Oh, Bonnie, what I wanted Bonnie to speak to is one of the things that we want to try at the next convention is to have some kind of a small writer's workshop. Bonnie, could you just say a couple of words about that?
We were talking about different ways of encouraging people to write that haven't already been writing or need just a little bit of assistance, whether technical or motivational or anything, to contribute. We had a workshop, as some of you remember, Bernice brought Carol McCarl down, and it was a very good workshop. We wanted to try something that is pretty easy to do in the way of a panel of some of our own members who might help equip people to start writing and mostly to motivate them that they can do it, offer some help, whatever it's going to take to widen the amount of experiences, ideas, all of those things from people. And I think that the biggest difficulty we discussed in that is finding or picking a time within our busy convention schedule to do that. There was concern about doing it late, people would be tired and other things. We didn't come to any specific recommendation, I don't believe, on how to do that, but I guess that'll require more. So we're aiming for the spring convention. Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker and Bernice and I will be working on that some more. And any ideas or input of how to do it, what you'd like to cover, we're always asking for input, and I wish we had a better way of getting people to give us input. It's my own little thing. So that's for the spring, hopefully. Thanks.
Okay. Now, you know that Bonnie, as chair of the CCB Seniors with Vision Loss Committee, they produced the document Failing Sight and the Family Plight, and that was done in 2003. We had an initial printing of 1,000. It was reprinted in 2004 and again in 2006. Each 1,000 copies. We are now almost out of those, and we are in the process of getting another 1,000 reprinted, a very popular document. And in rereading it, Roger and I just reread it, every word, and it is such a timeless piece and such a helpful piece. Anyway, last June, we produced 500 copies in Spanish due to the efforts of a number of CCB members. You know, We work really hard at trying to save organization money, and we were able to do this translation all through volunteers. Well, this evening, here with me, I now have the Chinese version of Failing Sight and the Family Plight.
Wow.
And I want you to know that was taken on by our member, Sam Chen, and he has done a yeoman job. He said, oh, Bernice, I'll have it for you in a month. And I said, Sam, don't tell me a month because I know it's not going to be a month. It did take him a little longer than a month, about 4 or 5 months. But I'm just thrilled to have it. And he also, he's already trying to curry some to the senior center where there's a large population of Chinese clients. Roger, can you hold this again, please? Yes. Question?
Yeah,
Jane. Yes, Jane.
In Cantonese or Mandarin?
It
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Yes, I learned that in this process. You know, all these projects are learning, are great learning processes for me. And in the written, it's the same. It's the spoken that's different. And you know, I wanted to share with you that we sent it to Lynn Laird, who by the way formats the large print version of the Blind Californian, and she said all she got up on her screen was little boxes. We sent it to the printer to get an estimate, and she said, I need PDF. So we had to work through all these things. We didn't know how to get Chinese characters into PDF. But anyway, we've worked all that out, and we now have. And this one is a light lavender. The Spanish is blue, and the English is in the light peach. Okay, now, let's see. No, I am taking up missions, Kathy. Well, they left me the time. Okay, so some of the things. Well, yeah. You know, we're such slackers on this committee that you know, some of the projects that we're going to work on next before the end of the year, we're going to review guidelines for organizations. And Bonnie already spoke about the writers' workshop that we're planning for the spring. The courtesy guidelines, we have a first draft in Spanish, and we need to work on getting that finished and then doing the Chinese version of that. And the convention program format, the formatting and the format in general, is we want to look at that and make some recommendations to to make it more user-friendly to the organization. And, you know, some years ago, a lot of us submitted recipes for a CCB cookbook. And I don't know, it sort of, I guess, has gone to the back burner. And I have to put in a little plug here, and this is why I'm suggesting this. The Silicon Valley Council of the Blind will be celebrating its 20th anniversary next month. And in to commemorate that, we are producing a cookbook in that has contains recipes that came that were brought of actual dishes brought to our summer picnics, our holiday parties, or to our monthly meetings as goodies, as refreshments. And each recipe has an anecdote, and several people who are working on the proofing have said that the anecdotes are much more interesting than the recipes. They find it very enjoyable reading. So having recently experienced what it takes to produce a cookbook, perhaps the publications committee could take a look at it and use some of the sources that we used for the SVCB cookbook and see about helping the fundraising committee get that project off the ground. But that'll have to be after the first of the year. Okay, the website. Okay, I want to thank Dan Kaiser immensely for his many years of hard work on the CCB website. Dan asked to step down effective June 1st, and so we now have a new webmaster. His name is Joel Isaac, and he's sitting here on my left.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, I'll have you say a couple words in a minute.
Sure.
Okay, Roger, hold this a second. We have a website committee, and the way we put it together was we not by people but by positions, and so that you know this could transcend after some of us are gone. It's the chair of the publications committee, the chair of the technology committee, the treasurer, and the webmaster. And we had a meeting. Finally, we got everybody together, and we have made some decisions, and Chris, I'm going to ask you to speak about that.
Okay, thank you very much, Bernice, ladies and gentlemen. I just met Joel Isaac for the first time tonight, and I'm very glad to have done that. We've talked on the phone on several occasions and had a meeting, as Bernice mentioned, recently. The outcome of that meeting, I think, is exciting for CCB. I'm certainly excited about it, and I think that the committee is as well. We're going to move the hosting of the CCB website from Earthlink to ACB's servers. This will have no effect on how you access the web and get into CCB's website. It will have no effect on the availability of the website except for positive ones. Now, speaking as your treasurer, I always have this motivation to save money. And the first and best thing I might tell you is that instead of costing us money, our website will now cost us nothing. And I like that. And I'm sure you do, too. In addition to that, though, that would not be the best reason necessarily to move. But in addition to saving us a certain sum of money, not a huge sum, but it does save us money each year, we will get far more bandwidth for allowing people to download things from our website, even do streaming from our website if we ever choose to do that. And it will give us more storage capacity, building capacity, growth capacity, and sharing capacity for doing the work that needs to be done on a website. So I'm excited about this move, and I hope you are too. And I know within 6 months you will be when you see all the new great things that we can do as a member of the ACB.org family. And given that we are an affiliate of ACB, that's a good reason to do it too. But stay tuned. There'll be a lot of exciting things happen. And as our webmaster and expert, Joel can tell you an awful lot more about those things than I. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I'm going to ask Joel to talk about the content, and I will follow the content, Richard, with your issue. Okay? Joel?
We have a lot of content on our website. That's one of the compliments we received since I've started asking what people liked about the website. That's the number one thing. There are a lot of resources there. One of the drawbacks, though, is not all of those pieces of content are accessible to everybody that wants to see them. One of the things that we want to do with this website is widen the audience that it's for. Sure, it's for blind people. We also want to draw in partially sighted people and people who are fully sighted. We need to avail everybody of all those resources. So there are a couple of things we're going to be doing to the look and feel of the site, with colors, with placement of the resources, making it easier to navigate so that you can get to what you need to do to look at when you want to a little quicker. Another thing that we want to do is we want to empower all the committees and I guess some of the other publishers like the California Connection, allow them to be able to publish things quicker so that you can get to them faster. Try to think of what else we want to do. It's a long laundry list. Well, let's leave it at that for the time being. We're looking at a wide scope and we're looking to empower CCB as a group a little more than we've been able to in the past. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. Some of the things will be delayed until they get the website moved, but once they do that, then it'll be full steam ahead. Richard Retta brought an issue up that we want to discuss, and I want to tell you how it is now, and then I'll tell you how we want to make it, and we'll see what we can do here. This is regarding the CCB scholarship application process. Right now, there's an application up on the website that is strictly for download only. So that's how it is. We feel that, well, Richard, I'll have you speak to that in a moment.
Okay.
But I want to tell you how it could be to be much more effective. And we know it works because Joel was able to assist the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International in this process. What he did was he made the scholarship application interactive so that students could fill it out online. One of the problems we've had with applications, it says that they need to be typed. They come in handwriting and whatever. And I know in CCLVI, those applications are not considered for awarding of a scholarship. Secondly, it's much easier for members of the scholarship committee to be able to access the scholarship applications electronically, saving a lot of wear and tear on their vision, trying to struggle to read the print copies, and as well as you know, the students who want to be able to do it that way. Also, it's easier on them. But what CCLVI does require is that when they send in their documentation, such as their transcripts and their letters, et cetera, they do need to print out a copy of the application that they have filled out online and sign it and attach it to their documents. So, Richard, do you want to...
Well, before you say that, Richard, I do intend, by the way, to call a scholarship. I don't think the board needs any action on this, although we certainly can discuss it. Mm-hmm. But I do intend to call a scholarship committee meeting in early December to hammer out the changes, if any, that we need to make in order to make this happen, because there's no question that this will save a lot of work. A lot of folks won't need tapes. Some will, but a lot of folks won't. It'll make it a lot easier for the scholarship applicants, and it's definitely my goal, and I hope the scholarship committees as well, to have this in place for 2008.
Jeff, I think I would strongly encourage you to have people like Bernice, Joel, Donna, Catherine Schmidt-Whittaker, and myself to advise, because the CCLVI scholarship process online met with tremendous success, and we revamped the whole process that we did it last year, and I think we're trying to influence ACB to go the same route. Not only does it save committee members a lot of time, I'm pretty sure there's a direct correlation why scholarship applications for our organization is down, because more and more scholarships are being applied for online across the country, worldwide. That's what students are doing, computers. Yeah. There's a direct correlation. And if we're going to sit here and the scholarship committee or whomever is going to say we only can do print applications, we're going to lose a lot of people. And we have lost a lot of people, and that's my opinion. So I think we as an organization really need to take the leadership of Bernice, Joel, Donna, Kathy, for CCLVI and take that next bold step and really bring CCB into the 21st century and make our scholarship process online.
Yeah, Richard, we will certainly include the appropriate individuals on such a phone call. And I'm only one vote, but I actually tend to agree. I don't think, and I know there will be people on the committee that disagree with this too, but I kind of think we should do away with signatures. Because everybody is doing it online these days. But there are two sides to that story, and that's something that will have to be, I think, fleshed out and debated, because there's definitely two sides to that issue. But that can be worked out by the committee, and the committee will have, you know, will be sovereign in that area and have its will, you know, determined. But
do you think, Jeff, that'll be something we could look to do next year?
It's my full intention if the committee votes in the affirmative, and obviously I'm going to leave it in the hands of the committee. It's their final will, but it would be my hope to urge the committee to implement this for 2008, yes.
Okay. I think we'll see a significant increase of Californians apply if it's online. Bernice, can I mention a couple more things? Just
sure. I just want to say that please give the webmaster ample time to get that up there. It does take a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, that's why we want to meet in December, because if we can get it up by within a couple months after that, then we
Yeah, he does have a day job.
That's right. We want to get it done early and give him substantial time.
And Jeff, I urge you, pick on me, Bernice, us who did it with CCLVI. It's doable with a committee of three. We did it for a lot of people. Bernice, I was going to address the website or the listserv.
Yes. Yes.
The Blind Californian, like I said, I think we have 105
Five. Uh-huh.
Members who are receiving the BC, and you can still receive it in your preferred format. And I only say, for purposes of outreach, keep your preferred format. And if you don't read it, give it to a friend. You know, get people involved who normally wouldn't read it. I give it to my coworker, whether he reads it or not, I don't know. But at least it's in front of him. The other thing, the CCBL listserv, we have about 103 members subscribed. And on the other significant, the California Connection email announce list, we have 85 members. Some of those are duplicates, or like myself, we'll have two email addresses. The only thing I would urge everyone to be aware of is, please, if you're changing your email address, just like an address change, you got to let me, the CCB moderator, know, because people come to me and go, why am I not getting a Blind California? Oh, because you changed email addresses 6 times ago and didn't let me know. So that's really about it. But otherwise, the coordination of that is going well.
Okay, what about the students and the presidents?
I wanted to highlight CCBL, the BC, and the Connection, because of the most high traffic list. The student list right now has about 25 members. The CCB presidents, it's you know, for the leadership of CCB, it's about 47 or 50 members on there. And then we have a CCB membership list that artists asked me to put together, and it's mostly just the membership committee on that listserv.
Richard does a great job in doing that.
Yes, let's give it a hand for Richard. All right.
He too has a day job. So the one last thing that I have to say is we have lots of ideas of things that we want to eventually get up on the website. If you have suggestions for things that you feel need to be up on the website, please let the webmaster or myself know so we can work on trying to get those up there. I'm sorry this report was so long, but I felt that everybody needed to really have the information. And I want to thank the publications committee for all of their hard work. And, you know, we're here to serve, and we do our best. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernice. Thank you to your committee, to all of you that spoke, Joel, Richard. Joel's done a great job. I've had many great chats with Joel on the phone as well. The only thing I can say is, unfortunately, some of the things I was supposed to do for Joel haven't gotten done, but they're going to get done. We're just so lucky to have him join our little volunteer cadre here. Okay. Oh, we should have a motion to accept the Publications Committee report.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, motion carried. Okay, we're on to item number 11, 2008 CTEVH conference. We need to decide what, if any, role we want to play at that conference. Just to sort of background this, some years we've done nothing. Some years we've had a table and we've left it in the hands of sort of folks in the area to deal with it. And some years we have actually sent someone, as we did last year. whose responsibility it was to man the table or to at least help to get others to man it if that's at all possible.
Jeff?
Next year's, hold on for one second.
Sorry.
Next year's is in Anaheim?
No, it's LAX, right across the street.
Oh, okay.
Okay, 2 weeks before CSUN.
Okay, so I will leave it open for discussion now as to what we want to do. I forget it's the first weekend in March, correct?
It's over leap year, so Friday the 29th through Sunday the 2nd.
Yeah.
Okay. And just, what did we do last year in Santa Clara? We had a table, right?
Last year we had a table, and we sent, we had
Joni
a room.
Patchy.
Joni was sent, and there was a room there, yeah.
Okay, I mean, this is Richard, and I think it's one of the premier, we do this in rehab, it's one of the premier educator, teacher of the visually impaired, transcriber rehab conferences for blind persons, young persons in California, and we need, a CCB to get more members, younger members involved, and we need a tangible presence there, and our colleagues in NFB have their booth there with all their books, and I remember the first year I went, I walked away with so many books because they wouldn't leave me left at the table, and we didn't have a presence that year, so I think it's important for CCB and all its literature to be there among all the other vendors who are here at our convention, but all the other blind agencies in California.
Okay, is that a motion? You haven't made one.
I'll turn that into a motion that CCB, again, I think the nonprofit rate is $200 or $250 for the booth, for a table and two chairs and a badge to go into the workshops. And so I propose that we spend the funds it needs to staff that table and maybe encourage the local LA chapter, LA folks to staff that table so we don't have to send folks there to spend the night.
Okay. The motion is that we allocate the funds necessary and work with people in the local Los Angeles area to staff a table at CTEVH.
Incidentally, Jeff, just to clarify, the booth this year is only for Friday and Saturday. They're not doing exhibits on Sunday, and it is about $250, and the registration deadline is November 15th, and actually you save money if you apply before then.
Okay. My only question is going to be, and I certainly don't oppose it, we absolutely have to be there. We have to, and I guess that'll fall on my shoulders, I suppose, if this resolution passes, but we're going to have to find somebody who's going to be willing to step up to the plate to sort of spearhead this effort. Okay. Or no, I don't want one person to do it, but I want someone who's willing to sort of galvanize a few other people to do it. But I, yes, that would be wonderful. So we at least have someone who's willing to sort of chair this effort. So on that basis, that removes certainly my opposition, or my, not opposition, but my concern, and I will leave it open for further discussion.
Mr. President?
Yes?
Where's the
event? It's LAX Marriott, February 29th through March 2nd.
Okay, any more discussion?
Jeff, the other thing that we can do, and I don't know if we've explored this, but I know that we time to time we sell stuff. We can sell candy bars, keychains, and stuff there too, just as a side, to make a little profit. And there's a lot of people there, so that's something we can consider, given what artists or whoever wants to do. That's something definitely worth doing.
Okay, well, we'll get the fundraising committee right on this. Okay, that's a good idea. All right, no further discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, very good. Item number 12 is written. It should be two different items, and it's half. Both are half right here. We have to do spring convention subsidies and fall convention bids. So, in order of chronology, unless Gene has a preference the other way, let's deal with spring convention subsidies because we have to make that determination. Really, we can't wait for the budget for next year. So that we can put that all into play and get the convention announcement and get the hotel on their information to the Arden West. The hotel, the convention will be the 6th to the 9th, I believe it is, of April, that weekend. It's not Easter. I hope it's not anything else. We tried not to this time, but we don't always succeed.
Let's stick to the Sunday, Jeff.
Oh. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I think it's in the 9th or the 12th. But anyway, I have it, but I didn't bring it down with me. It's up in my room. So I will announce the dates during the session. I have it in my room. The room rate is $95, plus tax. And so what we need open for discussion, right now is what we want the subsidy, if anything, to be in terms of what the room rate will be that members will be required to pay?
I move that we subsidize $90 per room.
What you mean is, what he meant to say is that the room rate will be $90.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, exactly. I stand corrected.
But Peter, if you can invent the books in such a way that we can pay that, I'm in favor of it.
I can't remember.
Accountants can do anything.
I can't remember.
Almost. Okay. There's a motion and a second. Do we have discussion with respect to subsidizing the rate to be $90? Hearing none.
Mr. President.
Yes. I almost heard none.
I was waiting. This is Chris. I would strongly encourage and urge the board to consider a discretionary expense like this. Of course, a room subsidy is nice. Absolutely, we want to encourage our membership to attend CCB conventions. I'll get the roll right here sooner or later. Be that as it may, we're looking at a financial situation today that had we not received a great deal of assistance with good interest rates and favorable money conditions this year, we would already have spent over $100,000 more than we made this year. My friends, this must stop. If it doesn't, CCB will find itself in a very, very difficult situation before too many more years go by. Thank you.
You know, I'm actually going to be the curmudgeon and partly agree with the treasurer on this point. We will be subsidizing it. If we limit the rate to $95, we're subsidizing the entire amount of the tax. So there will be a subsidy no matter what. The problem is that at some point these conventions are just eating everyone alive with the increased hotel rates. And there is no question that it is unfair to expect folks to pay, you know, these outlandish amounts, but they're going to keep going up. We're never going to see another $80 rate, I don't think. There's a chance that one might happen in a couple of years, but I think it's a very, very negligible chance. And at some point, we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that, you know, that we can't subsidize to the degree that we'd like to. So I kind of have to second some of what the treasurer has said with respect to $90 being a pretty big subsidy, because that's really subsidizing probably to the tune of closer to $20 a room, and we're certainly going to. I don't think anybody's going to go with any less subsidy than down to the $95 rate itself, which doesn't include the tax, of course. So, you know, it is a tough choice, but we're going to have to look at that.
Yeah.
Yes. Who's that?
Rhonda.
That's the floor. Rhonda.
Peter Pardini made the motion for $90.
There
was.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to subsidize the rate to $90, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
We better have a roll call.
I'd like to have a roll call.
It's close enough. The maker of the motion wants a roll call.
Yes, I think we need a roll call, Rhonda. It's pretty close.
No.
Matthew's not here. Jerry R. Paula?
Aye.
David Jackson?
Nay.
That was an aye.
No, say no.
I'm going to be clear on that, David, because I don't know.
No.
Okay. I thought so, but.
David said yes?
No, he said no. Okay. That's why I want you to be clear.
Okay. Ann Kaiser?
Hardis? No. Louis Preston?
No.
Richard Reda?
Yes.
Can I call everybody?
What about me?
Yes.
It's Ty.
Is that it?
Jeff, I guess.
No, he was in Ty. Lewis is no.
Jane
is no. All that group down at the table almost.
No.
Except for Peter. Five and five. I'm going to vote no.
Okay. So I guess we have to have another motion on the floor to accept for the $95 subsidy. Am I correct, Jeff?
Huh? You have to vote for whatever you want it to be, yes.
Well, I mean, I think we have to have a... I move that we have a... We subsidize... I mean, that we have the membership pay $95 room rate.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Is there any discussion of that motion?
I have a question.
I don't entirely understand the motion. If the rate is 95, is the hotel charging 95?
95 plus tax.
95
okay.
plus tax. So,
your motion then, if I understand it correctly, actually is to have CCB pay the tax
yes.
on the rooms that would otherwise
yes.
be paid.
Right.
And how much is that?
Probably 12%.
I think it's 12, but I'd have to check it. But it's in that ballpark.
Okay.
So we're
talking
about $12.
So and that's something that we have, not saying we should or shouldn't, but that's something that we have historically done, obviously, since we have been subsidizing all the rates until now.
Okay.
This would be the first time we would have had a rate that we haven't, other than this convention itself, because we didn't need to subsidize as much. This is one of the rare times that we haven't subsidized even more than the tax.
Okay.
Just for the understanding of everybody.
All right. You know, in my book, a subsidy is a subsidy.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just trying to clarify what it is.
Thank you.
I mean.
Okay. Any further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Lewis. I thought you were getting Mike down there.
No, he's
down
there.
Okay. I think some of us may have voted no for different reasons. When you think of an increase, and you're talking about what people are going to pay, and you're talking about people who are traveling, and traveling expenses are going up, when you talk about the difference psychologically between moving up and staying in the 80s, I think that there would be more receptiveness to $85 than to $90. $85 as opposed to $80 seems like no increase.
Okay. So, Lewis, are you proposing to amend this motion to $85?
I doubt if the maker would accept it.
It wouldn't be a friendly amendment. You'd have to vote on that first. That would be the...
Well, I move to amend the motion to $85.
Okay. Is there a second to amending it to be $85? Okay. It dies for lack of a second. So, $95 is still out there. Just further discussion. No further discussion? Okay. The motion on the floor is to set the rate that conventioners will pay at $95 for the spring convention. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
We better have a roll call. Sure.
No.
Jerry R. Colla.
Aye.
David Jackson.
No.
Ann Pfizer.
Aye.
James Hardis.
No.
Richard Weather.
Aye.
Louis Preston.
No.
Peter Pardini.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I believe that's it. Okay, six yes, four no. The motion carries. Now, we need to go to, so the rate will be $95. We need to go to meal prices. Currently, and this is the way it's been for the last, I don't know how many conventions, I think since before I became president, I think in Kathy's term it was this way. 15 for the luncheons, 25 for the president's dinner, and 30 for the banquet. Do we want to continue that? It's open to discussion.
Yes, I'd like to. I mean, what kind of...
What are the real costs?
Yeah, what are the real... I mean, what kind of...
Oh, they keep going up, but it's the... The lunches are probably in the... You know, we don't have the menus yet for next year, but, you know, the luncheons are probably in the 21 plus 27%, you know, so you're talking the middle higher 20s. The banquets are, you know, getting the higher 30s to 40, depending upon whether it's the president's dinner or the banquet. So, yeah, we're definitely subsidizing those, too.
Mr. President, it's difficult for me not to apply, in my own mind, the rules we use in ACB for conventions to CCB. And yet, I do appreciate, and I'm thinking right now a little bit about how much more an ACB convention is viewed by some as a vacation than a convention. And I suspect that is less true in the state. I think people come to conventions in the state much more for education, much more for what they learn from their special interest groups and to come to the program. I hope that's true. Having said that, you know, the reality is we're probably subsidizing the meals too much. The thing about it is we need a report that would help the board understand the amount we collected versus the amount we spent, because it isn't just the cost of the meal, it's the gratuity, it's the tax, et cetera, et cetera. Against my better judgment as treasurer, I think that it would be wise for this board, and if you want a motion, I would move that we continue the current subsidy and that we request that a report be presented to the board within the next 90 days. Costing out the meal intake, the meal revenue versus meal expenses for the 2000 spring and fall conventions to guide the board in future decisions.
You mean which?
Which conventions? Which I don't know if you want to go back that far.
I'm talking both 2007 conventions.
Oh, 2007, okay.
So
okay.
If there's a trend, we can see it, and if there's, you know, different considerations, north and south, we can see them. But it will give the board a tool to analyze what we're really doing with the subsidies. I hate to make a decision without understanding that.
Okay. Chris, if I could throw in a friendly amendment, if you would be so kind. The other thing I think the board needs to consider is, just so that they have the knowledge, the meal guarantees in the hotel contracts. Because sometimes it behooves us to sell more banquet tickets, even if we're subsidizing them. And so we should have that information in the report.
Yes, I think that's a good point.
Okay, discussion with somebody on the left first. Do we have a second first? We need a second. Okay, there's a motion and a second.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Okay, somebody, who was it, Rhonda? And then I think I heard Peter. I don't know, somebody on the left called a second or one before.
Yeah.
For maintain, my understanding, and Chris will correct me, my understanding is to maintain the status quo for the next convention.
Yes.
And to have this report on the costs of the food and of the subsidy for the 2007 conventions, which we should be able to get in 90 days. I would hope the bill would be. The only reason we won't is if this bill isn't done.
Or the hotel gets sold again.
Yeah, well, the new may, yeah, but it doesn't get sold again. That's right. But we will get it as soon as possible because we definitely don't want to make another decision without such a report. So we can, by the time the next convention rolls around and we make other decisions for the fall, we can do it.
Was the friendly amendment relevant to the...
The friendly amendment was only that we would include information with respect to meal guarantees that are in the contracts.
Jeff?
Yes, Peter.
Yeah, I have a lot of that information already because I did the, you know, prepare that spreadsheet that breaks down all the meal costs.
Right.
And I'll be more than happy to do it again this year for the this convention. And I can give you a breakdown of how much money revenue we get in. And then I'll just, I can work with Chris and Ed on the contract guarantee, so we can put a, I'll be more than happy to put a report together.
Great.
With the assistance of our treasurer, Chris, and our administrative assistant, Ed.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those, yes, Jane.
What I'd like to say is not, I hope, not out of order. But particularly on Saturday, when we have our banquet, and we've just had, say, an OCB luncheon or something, it's a tremendous expense to a lot of people, and it's too much food. What? And I, you know, I'm just mentioning that because I don't know how we could change that to make it seem more worthwhile, but it just seems to me that sometimes we're force-feeding ourselves on some of these things, and I just think that if we could somehow figure it out so we didn't have so much food in one day, or perhaps make business meetings instead of food, just a thought. And that's something for those on that group to make that decision. But it just seems like a tremendous amount of money for people who really don't have not a lot of money when they come to the convention to spend anyway on food.
Jane, just let me, and then I'm going to let Jean reply as well, just let me reply to that. You make very valid points. The problem is when I'm and others am designing, you know, what we're going to do with respect to menus and things, if we don't sell a certain amount, if we don't provide a certain amount of dollars with respect to our banquet sales, we not only have to pay the in some contracts, we just have to pay those dollars. And others, there's even a stipulation that you may have to pay even more, like a penalty or a meeting thing or whatever. So there, it's big dollars that CCB has to pay if we can't meet these dollar amounts that they set up in the contracts. So if we were to say, okay, let's have a, you know, $12 boxed lunch for all of our luncheons, for example, which would be great for the members, it truly would. You know, some would object and say, hey, we want a little something better. But a lot of them would say, this is really good. We would probably end up raising our bill, our hotel bill, by who knows, another $5,000 or $10,000. So that's a problem. Gene,
just to piggyback on what Jeff just stated is that in the contract, in our negotiations, we have a minimum food and beverage amount we must meet, and number of guest rooms. And if we meet all those, then all our breakout rooms are free in most contracts. Otherwise, if we don't meet it, then we're going to be paying a rental for the breakout rooms and the ballroom. And that's an additional cost right there on top of it, too.
Okay. Any further discussion on a very interesting topic? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Let's go on to fall convention bids. I'm going to give the mic and let Gene give you the bids and the convention committee's recommendation.
Thank you, Jeff. The CCB office staff, specifically Ed Branch, put out the request for proposals throughout Southern California at least a year ago, and received assistance in getting information, these proposals disseminated via some of the visitors bureaus, for instance, San Diego. Some of the chapters and areas solicited requests for proposals from some hotels they thought would be ideal. And there's a number of them. I believe there's at least, that we're aware of, 30 that went out. But then, like the Visitors Bureau in San Diego, they disseminated on their own to a lot of hotels that we're not aware of. Part of our, in the proposal, there's a lot of things that are stated that are based on previous conventions. For instance, the number of guest rooms that we'll need during the convention, so that they can, the hotels, they can respond and tell us what, you know, they can possibly do. And approximately 330 rooms per convention that we asked for in our proposal. We also have had a cap as to asking that we're interested in getting bids of room rates of $100 or less. Through this, for this fall solicitation, we only had three that were below $100. We got many that were like $139 per night, and that was single, double, and triple. We even got one from San Diego that the best rate they could give us was $200 per night. Beautiful hotel, but at least on paper, I hadn't seen it, but it was great. So what we have at this time is the Four Points, where we are right now, the L.A. Marriott, and the L.A. Crown Plaza. Now, a lot of individuals in this organization have, for many years, been wanting to go back to the L.A. Crown Plaza. We had gotten a bid at the very beginning of the year, and just a few weeks ago I asked Ed to contact them again and see if they would give us another bid just to see if it might be more attractive than what they had given us, and they didn't change at all. So I'm going to try. The board and the convention committee have gotten the proposals and the information, and I'm going to try to hit the high points, and I know it's late and everyone's tired, but I ask for everyone's indulgence on this one. When it comes to room rates, the Four Points gave us a proposal for $90 per night, and that would also be plus 14% sales tax, and then there'd be a tourist charge, and that would be related to, I don't understand this part, but from where you reside, which one hotel said would be like $1.15. The L.A. Marriott was, for a single and double, was $99, for a triple, $109 per night. L.A. Crown Plaza, like the Four Points, was for a single, double, and triple, was $99. And again, that's all each of them. No. Yes, you like the Marriott. Yes. Thank you. Food hasn't gotten to the brain yet, the sugar yet. So, again, the room rate was $90 for the Four Points for a single, double, and triple. The Marriott was $99 for a single and double, and a triple, $109. And the L.A. Crown Plaza was $99 for single, double, and triple. The food and beverage, the Four Points was asking that it be $11,000 that we would meet. Then the Marriott was $1,500 for food and beverage minimum.
So $15,000.
So $11,000 for Four Points, $15,000 for the Marriott, and LA Crown Plaza was $6,500. And that's what I'll get into the the breakout rooms and rentals, the charge for rooms. If we the Four Points, it would be again we'd have to meet the minimum number of rooms, which is 330. We would have to have $11,000 for food and beverage, and then they added a labor charge of $1,000, which would be setting up furniture in the rooms, things like that. That was the Four Points. The Marriott is if we met the minimum number of guest rooms and a $15,000 for food and beverage, then the breakout rooms would be free. The L.A. Crown Plaza, if we met their minimum of the rooms, guest rooms, and $6,500 for food and beverage, they would rather than charging us $25,000 for the rental of the breakout rooms ballroom, they would give us a discount, and that would be $16,500. Exhibits that has been the tables have both the Four Point and the Marriott, they would not charge us for the exhibit tables and the two chairs that go along with it. The LA Crown Plaza would charge us $25 per table per day. Security guards, as you are aware, that we do have a security service on Friday evening from 5:30 p.m. to 7 a.m. the next morning. Both the Four Points and the LA Marriott would said the hourly rate would be $45 per hour for one guard, and it'd be a minimum of 4 hours. The LA Crown Plaza, theirs was a minimum of 6 hours. We would have a minimum of two security guards, and it'd be $25 per guard per hour. Overall, we'd have one person and pay a little more. Probably the next critical thing is, and let me get into it, everyone's waiting for, is, well, about the food, meals. And let's see. The going to have to switch from two different cards and things this. For lunch, the Four Points, it would be, now this is, includes sales tax of 8.25 and a 20% gratuity tip in these figures I'm going to give you. So it would be a range for the Four Points. It'd be $27.28 to $32.47. Now that is the Four Points. Now I got to switch back to this other document for the other two hotels. Okay, the Marriott, it would be, this is for lunch now, I'm not just talking about lunch, a minimum starting would be $36 for lunch. This is a plate lunch. The Crown Plaza, it would be starting at $35. And again, that includes the tax and the tip. Now, we're going to go to dinner. Got to go switch back to this other card. This is for the Four Points. We're talking about dinner, and again, includes tax and the tip, and that would be $31.18 up to $44.47. Switch back. Marriott, minimum. This is dinner. Starting, again, I stress, it includes the tip and the sales tax, $52. Crown Plaza, starting, minimum, it's $44 and $44, yeah. That's the minimum there. Let's see, just because we brought up about the idea of, you know, looking at box lunches, the Four Points did not respond to that, of how much a box lunch might be, so we have no idea. The Marriott could give you a box lunch starting at $34.34. You must get some good cookies with that. now the LA Crown Plaza, for their box lunch, probably not as good of a cookie or an apple, starts at $25.91. Yes, there. Now, all three hotels have a courtesy transportation between LAX and here. They don't have any other courtesy service for transportation, so they don't go to Amtrak or Greyhound and so forth. And then all of them, of course, dog relieving area. They're all will have that. The when we get into, let's parking, because we're thinking about the volunteers coming and paying parking and our staff. The Four Points, the rate is $9 daily, and they would give us a discount so that it would be $3.
That's a good deal.
The Marriott would, their daily is $19. And the discount they would give us is 20 passes, and the value of these 20 passes would be, then if we pay for that, would be $12. Now, and this is now going to the L.A. Crown Plaza, and their daily rate for parking is $6, and they did not indicate a discount. I think those are the high points there. They're all excellent properties. They all have their pros and weaknesses. I do not have the information, and maybe Jeff knows offhand. I don't have the dates for this, but they were targeted for the month of October and November. The convention committee's recommendation is to go with a Four Points hotel. It just overall across the board, it seemed to be the most affordable for the organization as well as the membership. And that's our recommendation.
Yes, Jerry. Okay, there's a motion and a second.
Mr. President,
I think that Ed, if I were here, I'd probably have these dates, but it's not in my packet, my little thing. The Four Points is right around the same week. I think one of them was the first weekend in November. And one was a little earlier, but I can't remember. I think the Marriott may have been the first weekend in November, but I don't. But they were all fairly close in terms of dates.
And they did not conflict with any known holiday.
No, none of them conflicted. Chris.
Yeah, Gene, you mentioned, I believe, that the room nights were 330 for the Four Points. You didn't mention the room nights, though, on the other two. Are they the same?
That's the minimum we have.
No, but he's asking, did the other two have minimum?
Yes.
They could. I don't have it right here, but it's they all could meet the 330. Some could give us up to 370, and I don't have that right now. But the thing is, yes, they can meet our needs.
Okay. So would it be accurate then to believe that the Four Points has the least expensive, the least number of nights required of the three hotels?
I think they were all fairly close to that. We're exceeding that. This year, for example, we have over 360. We may have dropped a little bit with the cancellations, but
sure.
But we're doing fine on room nights.
That's great.
And just to give you a comparison, we can meet the $11,000 or $12,000 pretty easily. That's close. I think we've met that before, but it's tough. Just in terms of what we can meet with respect to the. We did barely. So that just gives you a little background on some of the information.
We could not do the LA Crown Plaza. You know, even though it's $6,500, but they want the discount of $16,500 for the rental of the rooms. It's been tried, and they weren't going to budge at all.
In fact, one of the reasons they did come down on the initial rate, they came down $10 to get them down to there, but they wouldn't budge on some of these others, like the meeting fees. So we tried.
Just for point of information, with the old configuration of the Crown Plaza, the exhibit space is basically unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. We've outgrown the exhibit space at the Crown Plaza.
Any further discussion?
I'd like to ask Gene a question.
Yes. Can we get a mic down? We've got a mic down there for Liz.
I think the last time, Gene, the Four Point offered us a two-year deal. Did they say anything about anything like that this time? Because it worked out good for us.
Yeah. No, there's actually a pretty good reason why we really didn't want it. and that is that we're trying to look at some other things. We've got some folks trying to look at some other downtown hotels and keep the rates down. We've got some folks in San Diego who are trying to look at something that we can do, because we really need to go to San Diego sometime. So I think we don't want to lock ourselves into 2009. That flexibility is a good idea. And then who knows? There may be a groundswell to do away with two conventions by fall of 2009. Anything is possible. So, at this point, I think it's probably well to keep that flexibility.
Okay.
Okay. That's about it. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the convention or the motion to accept the convention recommendation of the committee's recommendation of the Four Points Sheraton, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the motion is carried. The Four Points will be happy.
Jeff, can I make one comment?
Yes.
Brief.
The convention committee has asked via Jeff if Dan Kaiser could do an informal survey during the convention and actually get a sense from the membership of how much would be the maximum they'd be willing to pay a room rate at a hotel, a convention. That would help us in seeing whether... Oh, sure. It'd be nice to have... I remember back in 72, I think it was $30, $35 at the Leamington Hotel. Those good old days. Do I hear? Yes, but so... So I just want to let you know that is something we're just informally, and that's why Dan is. We just want to get an idea because, like Jeff said, there was some committee members that brought up. You know, we might need to discuss again going to one convention per year, we're just trying to get some information. Okay, Jeff.
Mr. President.
Okay, hang on, Chris, for 1 second. Is Ken Metz in the room? He is not. Okay, you'll probably have to call his room about that. Okay, Chris, go ahead.
I wanted to ask one quick question before we move on to item 12. The board moved to ask the convention committee to look strongly into viable convention sites in the Bay Area for spring of 2009. I wonder if the committee is prepared to make any report or early comments.
Well, not too much yet, except one of the places we're actually looking into, in addition to what we've done last year, and we'll obviously press harder on what we did last year, is the Clarion, where we met before. So we're going to try and broaden our horizons a little bit. We may even see if there's something we can look at in San Jose. You know, we definitely know, it's not so much the board's motion that I consider important, right, although it's important, is the fact that we definitely need to get to the Bay Area, just like San Diego. I mean, there's just no other way about it. And we're on board with that, and we'll do what has to be done. We don't need to go back to the Arden West for the fourth straight time if we can help it.
Yes. We also need, we don't really, like Jeff just gave you basically a summary of it, and efforts are going to be made to work with more of the visitors' bureaus and get their assistance. And I'm in contact with the California Hotel and Lodging Association to see if there's anything they may be able to help us in identifying properties that we're not aware of. But it would also be useful for the board to give us some guidelines to work with. You know, like we've been using the cap of $100. Now, maybe the board might feel that we should, in the Bay Area, be asking something like $110 or something like that. And how much is considered reasonable by the board for people to pay for transportation, ground transportation? Because that has been a factor when we were looking at some super shuttles. Some rates in the past was like close to $80 one way. So that would be helpful, too, if the board came up with some guidelines just for the convention committee to work with.
You know, if you could do that after that.
Okay. Any other discussion on this point?
I don't think it's
okay.
Going to go on.
We'll move on to item 13, Transition Council website. Richard, that's your item.
I think we're only talking about $30 here. okay. The putting on my other hat, one of the things that the CCB has been a part of since the fall of 2005 is a transition council that Department of Rehab co-sponsors with several other agencies for the blind who work with youth in transition. One of the major projects that we came up with was to come up with a website for teens and young adults transitioning from school to college, school to work, college to work in California. And that website's called Transition to Employment. Since the fall of 2005, CCB's had a seat on that committee, as well as the other consumer group organization, and about half a dozen other agencies for the blind. That website, transitiontoemployment.com, has been a groundswell to get students involved in the rehab process, in the transition process, work experience, mentoring, peer networking, you name it. And the only drawback is the website costs money, and all the participating agencies have been asked to donate upwards of $30 for 2 years to host the website. So I wanted to make a motion, as all the other agencies have or will soon be doing, for CCB to pay $30 to co-sponsor the site, because the other two agencies that are on board that really can't put money towards it is the School for the Blind, because they're a state agency, as well as the Department of Rehabilitation. So we're relying on our community partners to sponsor that site.
Okay. There's a motion. Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the motion carries, and Richard, you'll call
the Transition Council thanks you, and just courtesy of the Lighthouse in San Francisco, there you pay them because they co-sponsored, they underwrote it until we paid them off.
Okay, we will do it. No, it's just a one-time fee, one-time donation,
every 2 years,
$30.
Yeah.
Okay, and I can't remember who asked that this be put on the next item, the CCB Convention Online Registration. I don't remember who requested that this be put on the, perhaps, yeah, we have talked about it. There is a feeling among many of us that we should go the way that ACB has already gone for several years. Washington goes this way, I do believe. I know they do, because I've been on it, and have a convention online registration. I think staff now realizes that it would be a good thing. So I think we're all on board with it. We haven't run it by the convention committee yet. That's the one thing that we did not do. It just sort of came up here and there, and so I will apologize to the chair of that body. But we would obviously have to get the expertise of Joel and others to make it work. So I don't know that we need a motion from the board, but we certainly want discussion from the board. And now I will recognize Eugene because you're chomping at the bit at the top.
Are we talking about exclusively?
Oh, no.
Okay, I just wanted a clarification that's I think is an excellent idea to put it, have an electronic version, but we all know that there are members that are not connected to the internet.
Gee, you want me to get impeached in the middle of my term? Is that what you're...
Just one more way.
No, of course not. Just one more way of making things easier, both for some of those who are attending convention, and really, ultimately, staff will be benefited in the long run, too, once this takes off, and I think it will over a couple-year period. But I'm counting on Joel to help in this endeavor with the limited time he has, and it is limited, but we'll count on volunteer efforts to help on this, but we'll make a goal to try and get it done. Okay, ACB Legislative Seminar. We don't have the exact dates. It looks very possibly like it's going to be early March. I did want to, establish how many individuals we should send, because if I wait till we get the exact date, then I need to have a conference call and get that done. The sooner we have the ability to pick our people, the better airfares we get, the more money it saves, the more time people have to plan. So all in all, I really see a little benefit in waiting. We know we're not going to be any great deal different, 1 month from now than we are today. So whatever decision we make, I don't see any benefit in waiting to have a conference call in a month rather than doing it today. So, yes, Jerry?
Again, for purposes of discussion, I move that the board allocate money for 8 representatives to attend the legislative
seminar. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, this has been moved and seconded. The motion would be to send 8 individuals. That was the same number as last year. We had last year about 12, but four of them were, we had 12 and a half because we had half a Chris. And then we had, in fact, we had another half a person because we had Jesse too, Jesse Lorenz. And we had four from the BEP group. And we were all used in addition to the eight. We had the Harmons and the Hanlons from our RSVC group. And so in addition to the eight that were sent last year. So there, that is the motion. It's open for discussion.
Mr. President.
Yes.
I hate to rise in opposition to this motion, but again, I must point out to the board that as important as the legislative seminar is, both for California and for the nation as a whole, because of the number of representatives that we have in California, the amount of money we spend on the legislative seminar is absolutely discretionary. And it is one of the expenses that this board can readily and easily consider to decrease to begin to attempt to balance the budget of the California Council of the Blind. That is an attempt we must not step back from in 2008. I absolutely speak out in opposition to CCB paying for eight members to attend the seminar. And I move to amend the motion from eight to four.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay, there's a motion and a second to amend the motion from 8 to 4. Discussion on the amendment?
Yes.
Jane?
Because we have such a large state and we cover so much territory, and because last year I went to the legislative seminar and I've also gone, I think that was my third or fourth time to go, I just find it so important to have that personal contact with your congressman. And Dan Kaiser and I called on two or three people, and then along with Jeff as well. I just don't think that you can beat being there. And I think it's very important, and I follow up on all of that, and I've got very close connections with my representatives, you know, for the state and Congress. I just think it's very important that we do that, that
Jeff,
we continue to do that.
Jeff?
Hold it. Jane, were you done?
Well, that's all I have to say.
I just think it's extremely important. Okay. Richard, I believe?
I'm going to agree that we send only four, but I also thought maybe I really hate to vote not to send less than eight people because it is important, and all we have to do is look across the street at our colleagues and look how many people they send every year to their legislative seminar in January and how powerful they are. But at the same time, we need to be mindful of our income and how much we spend, as Chris so diligently said. However, is it something maybe we can explore and have some of our chapters and state affiliates fund and send people on their behalf?
Well, realistically, we can ask affiliates to contribute, but, I mean, you know, the bottom line is we have to decide how many we're going to send, because you have to assume that you're not going to get anybody else. It's going to go by a chapter. It could be that a chapter would help us to defray somebody's cost,
right.
Or you could do it the other way and say we'll send four and hope that they would send more. That, you know, either way, you could do it that way.
I mean, it's a hard decision, but I think, I mean, we have to look into our own resources, our own affiliates. If we're going to save money as an organization, we may have to have our chapters help us out to fill that gap. That's all I'm saying.
Mr. President? Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, like Chris says, you know, we're just experiencing some, you know, budget constraints right now. And I know that it's really important to do this legislative seminar at ACB, but I believe that four members could possibly do what we need to do, because you don't always get to see the people and you do have to do some drop-offs. But I would like to see, if we send these people, I would like to see that we try every effort, especially the individuals, to reach out to their local community, to the Kiwanis and the Lions and Eagles and whatever, to try their hardest to get some sponsorship to help defray the cost of sending the attendees.
Okay. Next, Jerry.
I know this is an issue that that comes up every year, and I, like Chris, am very concerned about our economic circumstance right now, the outflow of expense. But several things come to mind, and this is why I made the motion. I think most importantly, next year is an election year. It's also a presidential election year. I feel that, you know, we are the largest affiliate in ACB. I think it's important for California to have a substantial presence on the national stage, particularly next year. The we have heard a number of issues. You know, California or the Congress, despite what the Democrats have tried to do, remains very, very divisive. We only have to see what's happened with the S-CHIP bill to know how very fragmented and divisive the congressional stage is right now. And I think it's important for us to buttonhole as many legislators as we can to state our position. More importantly, and I think I said this before, there are a number of issues. You know, we can debate all the areas where we're spending money and where we need to cut back. But if we aren't here for advocacy from whether it's at the individual level or at the national level, what are we here for? I think that's that's really the bottom line. And personally, I would like to see if there are ways to cut our expenses in almost any area but for this. So that's my opinion.
Okay. Who wanted the floor?
Chris, for a brief comment.
Wait a minute. Before you do, though, is there anyone who wants the floor who hasn't spoken yet? You'll get it. You'll get the floor.
Okay. I think one of the big words is prioritizing. And in this case, I think this should be a number one priority. Now, how the priority becomes a reality could be through increased fundraising. It could be taking a look at the overall budget. It could be taking a look at a lot of different things. But one of the key things that we need to look at is timing. And as someone has stated before, this coming year is going to be an absolutely different kind of year. And I think about Kathy, if Kathy were here, she would say that, hey, either you do it or you don't, but don't sit on the fence. Either it's important to you, and if it's important to you, you do the very best that you can. And four people, I don't think we'll get the job done.
Okay. Does anybody else want to speak that has not?
Mr. President, I'd like to speak.
Okay. David?
This is an invaluable experience, and four people isn't going to do it. I agree with what Jerry just spoke about. This organization is an advocacy organization, and I don't want people to forget about that. The people that go back to Washington, they do speak with the representatives, they do make contact, and things do get taken care of. So, if anything, this does need to stay. This is very important to us.
Okay, Gene, and then I think Chris would be next.
I'm in support of the amendment, reluctantly, for limited to four persons. I think we do have to start looking at balancing our budget and seeing what the priorities are. I would hate to see areas like the crisis or advocacy funds be cut there. I mean, that is some real reality of people, life and death in some situations. I think we just have to bite the bullet and face it that we're not in a position this year to send eight people. I think we just have, unfortunately, to face that reality.
You know, I believe strongly in the legislative seminar. It's terribly important. It's important that California be represented there. I would ask, though, that we consider the point of timing. It was argued that 2008 is an important time to be in Washington. I believe otherwise. I believe 2008 is the least important year to be in Washington of the past 4 years. It's a lame duck presidency. It's a lame duck Congress. And all they care about is the elections. And there will be little done in 2008 to move our agenda as disabled people. There'll be nothing done to move our agenda of medical insurance. I guarantee it in 2008. That's what I believe. If you were to argue that 2009 was a time that we could not afford to send less than eight people, you would have more sympathy from my perspective, because then we have a new Congress, we have a new president from whatever party. That is the year to make an expenditure like this, not 2008. In addition to that, I just want to emphasize to all of us, it is about choices. And if we cannot forego sending four people to Washington in 2008, what will we forego instead? Here we propose $70,000 for vehicle donation and fought. We thought that was too low for the year. We're not even halfway there at the end of September. Something, my friends, has got to give. Is it going to be the medical coverage for our staff? Is it going to be the crisis fund? We're going to have to make those hard decisions. We haven't made them yet, but we cannot continue to spend at the rate we're spending in CCB. Thank you.
Okay. I have to agree with Jerry and others. There are just some number one priorities that until we reach the point where we clearly can't be providing services, can't be having a crisis fund, can't be doing those, the scholarships and all the other rock bottom services that we currently provide. In that instance, then yes, we need to cut or maybe even do away with the legislative seminar. But it has many, many benefits. It shows who we are as an organization. In the biggest affiliate of an organization who is finally on the way up, who is finally crawling out at the national level of its physical hole. And now, if we in California need to try and do what we can to show that this organization is really on the rise. But it does far more than that. Any year that we go, whether it's an election year or not, it does far more. It gives people in this organization a real eye view of what it's like to be an advocate. They come back here, people like David Jackson, who have gone on to the board and who I think if he had not gone on that particular pilgrimage to Washington, D.C., would not have been as long and hard as he's been a great CC member. I think that made him even a better one, and he's only one of many. I think it is an absolutely tremendous way to produce future leaders. I think it is a way to show others what this organization is about. As Chris said, we have resources. We have assets of $1,650,000-some-odd, and yes, they're not all assets that we can spend in for general fund, but many of them are. We have endowment monies. Yes, we do need to make some cuts, and we can make some, but that is one that I adamantly hope that this board will oppose.
Mr. President?
Yeah, everybody's had a chance to talk, but since Chris spoke one twice, I suppose you could.
All right, maybe this is the final. I certainly hear what Chris and opponents of this motion are saying, supporters of the amendment are saying. But, you know, I would respectfully disagree that next year is the least important. Next year is a time of promises whether they're going to be hollow or fulfilled by the legislature. And I think, as Chris says, these folks are primarily interested in getting elected. I think next year is a time not necessarily to reap what we sow, to use an analogy, but to actually sow the seeds. That is to say, we can try to exact promises from legislators, and come 2009, we have more reason to hold these legislators' feet to the fire. You know, you told us this. Now, what are you going to do about it? Secondly, from a very practical standpoint, I've been fortunate enough to participate in this seminar twice. And I found it to be a very exhausting but invigorating exercise. You know, that California has the largest number of legislators on the Hill. To cover that area with four people is very, very difficult. I think we'll be more willing to accept drop-offs rather than actual attempts to visit legislatures or their representatives. With eight people, I think it's much more doable. It's going to be a challenge even with eight folks, just the way the seminar is organized. And finally, I think all of us, anyone who's chosen to be on the committee as a representative, we can all do a better job as far as preparation before we go to the Hill. Typically, what we do is to try to set up appointments for drop-offs or quick visits, and you never get a chance to visit extensively. But I think if all the representatives from CCB made a concerted effort to set up appointments well in advance, the chances of drop-off would be lessened, and we could exact more commitments, more promises from those folks who, as Chris says, are trying to get elected. So I think there are ways we could handle this, the seminar, our representation better. We can certainly look at ways to raise more funds. That's always an issue for us. But I strongly hope that the board would go along and support eight representatives from this organization to visit the Hill.
Okay, I don't want to cut off discussion, but what I will say is, if anyone else wants to comment, could they try and not repeat other thoughts that have been conveyed so we can get done?
I think if this amendment were to pass, then I think it's encouraging the local chapters with the support to go there to the local district offices of the congressional people and our U.S. senators here and talk to them, and also to try to make contact with the people who are running against them. And I think be more visible on the local level. I think right now that's where prior resources should be put with the limited funds. You know, and if we should come up with some funds in December, then I think then the board should get back together again and reassess where we are and maybe change our position. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Hearing none. We can do a voice vote, but I'm sure we're going to have to do a roll call. But all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oh, sure. We're voting on the amendment to the motion. The amendment would be that we would send four people to the legislative seminar. So after this is only to amend the original motion of eight. Okay. So all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to the amendment?
No.
I can't vote. Just take that away. So we'll do a roll call.
Aye.
Jerry R. Collins?
No.
Ann Heiner?
No.
David Jackson?
No.
Jane Cardis?
No.
Peter Cordini?
Yes.
Peter Vogt?
Yes.
Yes.
You said yes?
Yes.
And Richard?
Yes.
Said yes? Lewis?
No.
And I'll vote yes. I mean, excuse me, I'll vote no.
It was defeated.
It was 5-5.
Twice.
It was 5-5. Jeff
voted right,
yes.
I mean,
the amendment is defeated.
Okay, the amendment is defeated, and now we'll go to the main motion, which is to send eight. Do we have further discussion? And again, try not to say anything if you have any that hasn't already been said on either side. Hearing none. All those in favor will try voice vote first. All those in favor of the motion to send eight say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
I think the motion carried. Is there any disagreement? Okay. Motion is carried. Okay. We go on to, and you know, as a before we go off of this, we certainly will do what we can to urge affiliates to help, and we will request that whoever is sent try to get, to the extent possible, any local sponsorships. So I do take heed to the suggestions that were made during the course of the discussion. Okay, the next is just an update. On the Caltrans litigation case, as you know, we have a case against Caltrans, we and Californians for Disability Rights and some named individuals, including a blind person and others, for a lack of access to vehicular ways and sidewalks and along, you know, state highways, et cetera, and in terms of wheelchair ramp, curb cuts, I should say, and detectable warnings and protruding objects and the whole array of architectural barrier issues, other than accessible pedestrian signals, which we intentionally excluded and left for a later day because that's really our own issue, and we didn't want that put into this case as of yet, but someday we'll deal with it. They're taking a very hardcore attitude. We've already had folks deposed. Rogers had that pleasant experience, I understand. I have. I didn't give that attorney very much. I don't think. I hope I didn't. They are actually taking the position in a brief that they filed that Title II of the ADA violates the United States Constitution, which is shocking, and which we're going to have a resolution about their tactics this weekend. Even for the state of California, it's one thing to oppose, you know, to say that we're not bad, we're good, and it's another thing to actually try to say that the ADA is unconstitutional. I think that's just truly shocking. So this is just an update. This case is an ongoing saga, and I suspect it will be ongoing for a while. If you are aware of problems on state highways, and one of the things I kept telling them is, how can our folks be aware of them when we don't know what is a state highway and what isn't? If you are aware of any more concerns on state highways, a lack of detective warnings, et cetera, protruding objects, please let us know or contact Disability Rights Advocates. This is the attorney, and their number is, I think it's...
565-8644.
That's 510-665-8644. Thank you, Jean.
Mary Lee Kimber.
Yes. Yes, Mary Lee Kimber is in... She is working, and we're also getting legal counsel out of Washington, D.C. on the case from the AARP Foundation, which is kind of cool. So anyway, any questions on that? Hearing none, we're on to – are there any other announcements or items from the board before we go to public comment? I don't hear anything. Dan, are you still in the room?
Yeah.
Can you make sure that folks get to mics if we have any people for public comment? Okay. If you have any comment that you want to make about anything, the World Series or whatever, I don't know who won.
Mr. Chair.
Roger. Oh, I know he's going to talk about the World Series.
Their division.
Fat chance. I don't even know or care who's in it. That probably doesn't add to my cogency in some people's minds. Anyway, I'd like to just say that I'm a little disappointed with the quality of debate that's been going on, and the two issues I want to mention are the legislative seminar and the conventions. And with regard to the conventions, I think that we really have to think about whether we have the right model. This whole convention thing seems to me is getting to the point that it's not working, and we either have to decide that we're going to have conventions and get them subsidized to the point that we can have them seriously and have them in reasonable hotels, or else we have to do something else. And I kept saying, Fresno, we don't have to have them in Los Angeles and San Francisco. I would personally love it if we had them in some place like Fresno where nobody would have to fly. You could take the train and never have to fly. I don't care if I ever have to fly again, frankly. But anyway, I really do think that we need to go deeper within the convention question, not just one or two conventions per year, but whether the convention is the right model even. With regard to the legislative seminar, whether we send four or whether we send eight isn't too much material to me. I remember back in 1973 when I was just about to get thrown out of the NFB, and I remember John Nagel was fired from being the Washington office chief of the NFB, and one of the reasons was that he came out against one of their big dog and pony shows where they brought people in from all over the country to the Hill. This happened to be an anti-NAC thing. And he said, you know, you guys work at home and I'll work here, and it'll work out a lot better, and it'll be a better way to spend our resources. And I think he was right. And I haven't heard anything here tonight that convinces me that anything is gained apart from members of our organization feeling good because they took a trip to Washington and played on the Hill. I used to live in Washington, and you never saw the members of Congress when you went to the Hill. Unless you went to a committee hearing. I can see my member of Congress anytime I want to when she's at home. And if we worked at home and sent letters and so forth, we get a whole lot more bang for the buck than we do by having these Mickey Mouse parades to the Hill. Thank you.
Yeah, Roger, with just a brief comment with respect to, and all your comments are well taken, we are looking at Fresno. We've been struggling to get bids out of them. They say they don't have the times or they don't have. So we're looking at Fresno, even Bakersfield. We've sent out feelers to them. So we definitely aren't limiting ourselves. You know, Ontario, you know, definitely we're trying to look at, you know, I'd be happy to go to Bishop if they had a hotel that would. Yes, we thought we'd have a good one in Riverside, but it didn't work out. Anyone else?
Okay, this is Artis. I want to commend you for voting for the 8 for the ACB Legislative Seminar, because the reason I think 8 is so crucial is because then we can send 4 new people and 4 veterans, and that way we're teaching people how to advocate. And that will teach them how to do it in their home districts, too. Because, unfortunately, in your home district, you don't have as much of an opportunity to teach someone else how to talk to a legislator, you know, how to write the letters, et cetera. And each year, when we send 4 new people and 4 veterans, we have them pair up and we have them show how to do it. And it's a learning experience to teach them advocacy from that day forward. So I commend you for voting for the 8 persons.
Anyone else?
Thank you. Good evening. It's Rick Plath. It may be more of a national thing, although it could be a state thing, too. It has to do with the airlines, and it has to do with meet and assist. Most of the airlines, with the exception of Southwest, no longer have their own staff members when it comes to meet and assist. Most of the time, they don't speak English. Most of the time, you have to wait in order to get a meet and assist, sometimes as long as a half hour to 45 minutes when you're sitting there at the gate. And you, as a disabled person, you're pretty much treated as if you're nothing, oftentimes. And I'm pretty low-key, but I travel quite a bit, and I'm finding it more often than not, regardless of the carrier you take, with the exception of Southwest, because, like I say, Southwest still does tend to employ their own personnel when it comes to meet and assist or aiding disabled people, taking them from one gate to another. I just wonder if anyone else has experienced the same issue. That's number one. Number two, when you take some of these carriers, they have an Airbus. The Airbus has these little vests. They talk most of the time. They talk about, okay, you can take the seat off of your, in case of an emergency, you can take the seat and you can put your arm through the straps. No big deal. But I actually looked at some of these vests, and if you're not familiar with the vest, let alone if you're sighted, you're going to panic. You don't know where the red tag is. You don't know where the little holes are. You don't know where the straps are. I've mentioned it to the airlines, and they don't even know what to do about it. That's all I had to say. Oh, by the way, the Red Sox did beat the Rockies 2-1.
I love you, Linda, but not your team.
That's funny.
Okay, anyone else?
Hi, this is Jesse. And I have 2 questions. I hope you can address. Can you hear me? The mic keeps cutting out.
You're okay.
Okay. The first question has to do with vacancies on the board. I understand that there's going to be an election this weekend, and I'm wondering if you can... it's so weird. I'm sorry. It keeps cutting out. If you can clarify for me the vacancies that will be available in the upcoming election.
The second question
is, can you tell me how many paid staff CCB has and whether they're FTE or... tell me a little bit about staff.
Well, okay. In terms of the elections, we have a vacancy in the office of First Vice President because of the reluctantly accepted resignation of Mitch Pomerantz when he took over the ACB presidency. We have the office of Second Vice President, which is up for election, and we have the office of Secretary, which is up for election. With respect to board members, we have the position of Jerry Arakawa, and he is the nominee. We have the position of Peter Pardini, and he is the nominee. We have the position of Ann Kaiser and Richard Rueda, and they are nominees. And then we have a vacant position, and I won't say who it is because I'm going to wish her well in a couple minutes before we leave. And then that person, whoever that person is vacant is, we have the nominee is Steve Fort. And so those positions will all be up. And now I've given you the whole report. But, oh, the second question, we have three paid staff. We have two full-time staff, and we have one part-time person, Diana, who's part-time. And that's it.
Anyone else? Okay. Yes.
I wanted to comment on Rick Plath's comments. And yes, Rick, on the first part, we are experiencing the same kinds of things with the airlines that you are. And perhaps I would like to make a suggestion to the convention committee chair. In 1982 in Atlanta, and I think you were there, Gene, we were able to get... Pardon? No, it was, no, this was Eastern Airlines sent some flight attendants with two seats and some of the oxygen masks to the exhibit hall, and people were able to experience that. And Roger, I think, was one of the people that actually went. They took people to the tour to the airport. And what did you actually do on the tour?
Well, I opened the window exit, for one thing.
Yeah, and got to and got to experience it. So maybe we need to get an airline to come and do that so that we are more familiar with. One of the things they were doing was with the life jackets, showing us all the tabs and the, you know, all the things that you need to do. And they, you know, they had us pull up the seat cushion and all of those sorts of things. So perhaps that's something that we could do in a future convention.
Okay, we can look into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Gene.
Thank you for correcting me. I thought it was Delta Airlines that we had actually. Well, okay, we went to Delta, and actually, and Roger might have been there also for that one. But we actually were given an opportunity to three different types of simulators that the flight attendants are trained on show how to exit the aircraft. We physically did this. We removed the things and climbed out and did the things. Yes, we did all that thing. And the thing is, showing how to do these things, they even timed us, and we had the training. Those of us who were blind were actually faster than the sighted persons. The thing is, if I were to go on one of those aircrafts today, I wouldn't recall how to do that. I think what should be done is actually having it mandatory that when you go on your aircraft, the flight you're going on there, that not just showing you just the they should continue and see that they do it, like the airbag, but actually have one of those devices show you on the aircraft so that you don't have to try to remember each time you go from plane to plane, is this the certain type of aircraft, that you actually have the type of device and a given orientation on the flight you're going to be flying on.
They don't even give us the briefing anymore, let alone they're not going to take time to do that.
Well,
you don't care about the passengers.
Actually, some of them have railroads.
Yes, they do that, and I've had... I guess it's a mix. I mean, I've this year been flying a lot across the country with American, United, and Southwest and Northwest, and different flights. Some of them, the flight attendants were actually spending so much time going over the things, it was just more than I wanted. Others just didn't bother and agree on that. And unfortunately, Southwest Airlines is really great. The flight, the sky caps are really good when you get them. But like, I think that's even changing. At least Sacramento, they apparently contracted out. And I had to wait 45 minutes to get a sky cap before I could get to security today. But they are probably the best. I'm not saying that we shouldn't look at. We will look at the idea of asking some airlines to come to a convention and try to replicate that. I'm not saying no to that. We're going to follow up on that, okay?
Anyone else?
Okay. I'm going to wrap this up. I want to say that we've been lucky for the last 8 years, I guess. It's been 8 years. To have had an incredibly passionate and compassionate board member amongst us. Jane always has something worth listening to when she decides to talk, and she really works hard. She works hard both at home and in Washington, D.C. So she represents us everywhere and is the epitome of the type of person that makes this organization what it is. So, you know, without making this long meeting any too much longer, let's just... give our very, very best to someone who's going to be leaving this board at the end of this year, a great board member, Jane Cardis. Jane, you want to say something?
I think it's been a real education, and it's been my honor, and I've learned so much. There's just no way that I can thank everybody for, you know, giving me my wings and letting me do things. And I must say that I believe everybody should start with their city council and their board of supervisors and their state representatives, and then go on. And you'd be surprised what a difference it does make when you pick up the telephone and call these people, and there's some name recognition. One of the things we're going to do before the presidential election, because this is the first time we've been allowed to use our signature stamp in Mendocino County, they're going to use it as a photo op so that we can take some pictures and really go down and do those. So if you haven't, don't have a signature stamp and you want to get one before the next election, because you have to have that on file, it's a great thing to do, because we do work hard. And when we make little steps like that, they're all so important. That's it.
Thank you, Jane. Okay, anything that's greatly pressing before we adjourn? Hearing none? Well, we'll get it during the course of the weekend, so we can let everybody out of here. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Do you want to adjourn, or do you want
executive session? Yes, I'm sorry, to be clear.
I would move that the board of directors go into executive session.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, we are hereby adjourned.